everybody. Welcome on over to the War Room. I am your host, Matt Tardio. For those of you guys that don't know me, I normally host the Speak the Truth podcast over on YouTube. If you guys need to find me, you guys can go over to X. You can search my name, Matt Tardio, or AngerTab. My whole thing is I promise you some of you guys are going to love me and some of you guys are going to hate me. And that's okay, because what I want you to be throughout this entire program is be a critical thinker. I want you to pay attention to the information that I give you, analyze it, and determine for yourself what it is that the actual truth is, because I think one thing everybody can agree on is that nobody can trust mainstream media anymore. I don't trust a single word that comes out of anybody's mouth, for that matter. There's this word that we had in the military. What was it called? Trust but verify, I think is what we used to say. Trust but verify. And there's going to be tons of examples you're going to see of that coming up throughout today's show. We're going to be going over a lot of different things today. We're going to be talking about, in the first hour, transgender issues. I've got a whistleblower that's coming up that used to work within the medical industry, and she has been covering all of the malpractice that has been taking place. It used to be that medicine was about patient care, what's doing what's right for your patients. And then as it turns out, in her case, it's not so much that. That's not what she witnessed, it's not what she experienced. She's even alleged certain things such as insurance fraud as it goes through it. She's going to be their first guest today of the hour. Then after that coming up, we're going to be going over the border. Yesterday morning, I spoke and I had told you guys that our border is not secure, despite what the president says. He wants you to believe that it's secure, but is it really? I've got a guest coming on. He provided me videos and he provided me photos of the Mexican military on the U.S. side of the border. You heard that right. The Mexican military on the U.S. side of the border. Brianna Morello reached out to DHS for a statement on that, and they didn't even bother responding to her. Now, what's really troubling about this is that these uniformed members of the Mexican military, they're fully armed. They were in full uniform. There's about a platoon-sized element of them. So you're talking about 30 to 40 people, soldiers, walking around shaking doors on U.S. soil. It's a bit of a problem. And the man that provided it, well, he is a very reputable human being. He's directly shown Tulsi Gabbard around the border. He's had people like Joe Kent out there, and he's even testified before Congress. A lot of the information that he has is extremely troubling about what's actually continuing to flow into this country. He's been promised that he's going to get additional resources and more things that are going to be done about it, but it just doesn't appear like it's been that way. We're also going to have Rich High. You guys might know him as Angry Cops. He's going to be coming on. We're going to be talking about the shooting that took place with, what's his dang name? Alex Preddy, an ICE agent over the weekend. A lot of people and a lot of misinformation are going around about this. Well, we're going to talk about the legalities behind it. We're not even going to sit here and tell you whether it's right or it's wrong. I might give you my opinion on it because I think it matters. If I have a bias, I'm going to state it. That way you have information that you can actually use to your benefit and you know what to take and what not to take. After that, we're actually going to open up the phones. If you guys disagree with anything that we talk about, or if you have an argument with what we're talking about, feel free to bring it up. Or if you have questions, like I said, I want you to be a critical thinker. Following that, we're going to end up having Nate Vance on the program. Nate is a, well, I wouldn't say a massive name, but he started to become a pretty decent sized name last year. He happens to be the cousin of Vice President J.D. Vance. They were raised like brothers. Nate spent years over inside of Ukraine fighting for the Ukrainian military against the Russians. And before I even reached out to him and talked to him about a year ago, I called over through some of my friends that are over in Ukraine fighting and vetted to make sure that Nate was a stand-up guy. Turns out he is. He's beyond a stand-up guy. Nate is a stellar human being. He's turned into a decent friend of mine. Well, now we have the United States that's sitting outside of Iran, and we're ready to bomb the crap out of them. There's talks of us having an embargo taking place outside of there where we're going to start enforcing sanctions against the IRGC. That's a foreign terror organization designated by the United States and Canada. If we start blockading off their oil and start boarding their ships right outside of Iranian waters, there's a good chance that Iran's going to shoot back at us, and we're going to turn around, we're going to start bombing the crap out of them, and it's going to keep going. Well, what's the issue? Well, Trump, at the beginning of the month, warned Iran and said, if they continue to kill their civilians, we're locked and loaded and ready to go. Here we are weeks later. Reports of upwards of 50,000 Iranians have been killed and the U.S. hasn't done anything. And then Trump came out and made a statement today. And guess what? His statement had absolutely nothing to do about Iran killing its civilians. No. It had to do with uranium. And it's the same warning that we gave them last year before we started bombing them. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. It's going to be an amazing program. I promise you, you're not going to want to miss it.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling three emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and two others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get one or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
You're tuned in to The War Room with your host, Matt Tardio. Watch it live right now at fan.video.
Hi, everybody. Hope you guys can hear me out there. It's going to be a lovely day because my next guest is going to be a whistleblower known as Jamie Reed. Jamie has been blowing the transgender issue wide open. And some of the stuff that she actually talks about is unreal. I'm going to play a clip for you guys of her testifying. And she's done this in nearly over 17 different states here in the United States. And she's had really good effects. And what she's doing is she's talking about the malpractice that's taking place within the transgender medical community. Let's go ahead and roll that clip for them.
Thank you for your testimony. Was there a moment where you used to speak one language and then you changed how you spoke and now you're speaking like you speak now? And was it the science? Was it the witness? What part changed? And then is there anything in your testimony that you wanted to say that you weren't able to say as a result of you said there's questions that you could answer?
Thank you, Representative, for the question. Yes, I was once an absolute true believer. I trained judges within the state of Missouri around gender-affirming care. I trained all of the other divisions within the hospital setting around what is referred to as gender-affirming care. I believed wholeheartedly in this protocol. My spouse is trans, who has now walked back her transition. She was trans for 13 years. There were three aspects that made me come to change my mind. Number one, this protocol itself was built on regressive stereotypes and is homophobic. The first 70 children that were put through this protocol, 68 of them were same-sex attracted. The entire DSM protocol is based on stereotypes about what sexed behavior looks like, and most gays and lesbians in childhood do not fit the mold of what regressive stereotypes look like for sexed behavior. Of the 71st children that were put through this protocol, one of them died because the protocol itself destroyed what used to be the way that we would invert an adult's penis to make it a vagina. The puberty blocker itself makes the penis not grow to the point where that child was put through a vaginoplasty that used their colon instead, and they died of a massive infection. The protocol itself is homophobic. Number two, I saw a patient population go from four new intakes per month of children who are mostly prepubertal boys to 50 to 60 new patients per month, and 80% of them were teenage girls. Guess what teenage girls have in common? They are absolutely susceptible to social contagion. This occurred right when COVID lockdowns happened, right when we stuck one of these in all of those teenagers' phones, and right when we saw all of these girls watching videos. We actually referred to it in the clinic as TikTok ticks. They literally were parroting and coming into our clinic with the exact same storyline that they learned online about what it meant to be trans. And then third and finally was that I actually harmed patients. This protocol itself physically harmed my patients to the point where I was sending children to the emergency room for emergency surgeries after they had their first sexual experience and their vaginas were ripping open. We removed the breast of a young woman who called us back begging to have them put on. She not only had detransitioned and was re-identifying as a woman, she was also pregnant. She also grew up in foster care. And she literally told us that part of this identity for her was a social contagion. So I absolutely had to change my mind because ethically it is the only right thing to do. And I beg my party, please do the scientific right thing. Thank you.
That is probably, you know, I've listened to so many clips of hers, and every single time I hear a new clip, my head about explodes. If I heard her right, which we're about to bring her on in just a sec, they said that they took somebody's colon and turned it into a vagina, and then they got a massive infection. I'm pretty sure she said they died. What happened about the Hippocratic oath of doing no harm? Not to mention we're talking about children here. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome my guest, Jamie Reed. Ma'am, how are you doing today? Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, of course, of course. So let's start off with a little bit of your background. How long were you on this side of medicine?
I worked in a pediatric gender center for almost 5 years.
So for almost 5 years. And at what point was it, what was it you saw that made you go, I need to start speaking out?
There were so many elements along the way, but I think the final catalyst was when basically I was told by the physicians that I worked with that I was no longer allowed to say that I had concerns about my patients, that I was no longer allowed to question any of the treatment protocols that we were putting these kids on. And I just felt like they had pushed me so far into a corner. The only thing I could do is blow the whistle.
Yeah. And I think probably one of the most disturbing things I've heard you say was that there is no standard of diagnosis. It's not equal across all 50 states. There's none. So when somebody comes in, I think your exact words were, if the patient says they're trans or then they are. Is that true?
Yep. That's exactly how we phrased it. That's exactly how we were operating and with children. If the patient, the child claimed that they were trans and that they wanted to medically transition, we would medically transition them. We would put them on this protocol.
And also part of that protocol is that they are supposed to go in front of a psychologist, correct, to determine whether or not they're transgender. Is that accurate?
In the United States, we took a model that used to be based on this kind of psychosocial therapeutic assessment process, and we turned it into, we fast-forwarded everything, we sped it all up. I had patients who saw a single mental health professional for 1 hour and came out the other side being put on puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, moved on to surgeries.
That's insane. You'd also stated, I think,
one of your testimonies
that I was listening to. Right, they're kids, which is absolutely insane. In one of your testimonies, I also heard you speaking that you basically force-fed the psychologist their statements that they were going to end up coming out with. Or the hospital did. So they would say, listen, this is the verbiage so that we can get it through insurance and you guys are just going to fill this in. So they go, they see him for an hour and then the psychologist blesses off on it, just fills in the blank. It's like a shell form. And then they're blessed off on and they start getting put on puberty blockers. What's the youngest you've seen them being put on puberty blockers?
So puberty blockers are supposed to be started at a certain stage of puberty, but that could be as young as 8, 9, 10.
How do the parents even, like, how does this even happen at 8 years old? I mean, an 8 year old, I'm thinking about my own kid. I have 3 kids. And I remember at 8 years old, I'm still trying to teach them about life. Like most kids, some 8 year olds believe in Santa for crying out loud.
The youngest kid we saw was 3.
That's insane.
we were seeing children 3, 4, 5, 6. We would be affirming them socially. So agreeing with them, yes, you're trans, you know, changing names, pronouns, transitioning even in a school at that age, pre-K, kindergarten. The medical interventions, the earliest they would start would be at that Tanner stage 2 in puberty. But one of the other things I found really challenging is that the parents didn't always agree. And oftentimes it was the dads who would not agree with this. And it was the dads who were asking for more time, more therapy to slow down. And oftentimes there would be, you know, the mom was really gung-ho and really on the side of a quick medical transition.
So what happened in a case like that where you have a mom and a dad that are disagreeing, where a dad says, no, I don't want them to begin transitioning, but the mom that says they do, does the hospital say, well, for the betterment of the patient, they need to go ahead and start transitioning, so dad, your word is just irrelevant?
It was worse than that. So there were parents that we basically told them to seek a divorce. The doctors that I worked with would go to custody cases and fight against the non-affirming parent. I remember one dad who, highly educated, came in with a whole binder full of research studies, and he just wanted to sit down and talk to the doctors about his concerns. And we treated him like he was a dangerous threat, and we refused to let him come up to the clinic room. We met him downstairs in this very bizarre kind of office setting where we had the hospital security sit with him in the room. We treated the parents. I've never seen anything like that in any other medical kind of care.
How? I mean, they're a parent, and I mean, like, the role of a parent is to make the best medical decisions for them. And that's, so the hospital is looking at it and saying, no, dad, you're a threat to this child because you don't agree with this medical assessment, which we don't have a surefire way. There's no standard of diagnosis. It's just because we say, therefore, your child will be receiving this treatment and you need to go over here. And by the way, you make it a pain in everybody's butt. We're going to send people to court, going through divorce court, custody cases, everything else, in order to shoot you down even further.
Yes, and these dads would lose custody. They would lose visitation. They would lose medical decision-making. Some of the things that I grapple with the most and have the hardest time with is I worked in a hospital where our mission statement was to be the protectors of childhood. And we were intentionally destroying families.
Can you state the name of this hospital?
St. Louis Children's Hospital.
And where?
I live in St. Louis, Missouri. It was Washington University School of Medicine's St. Louis Children's Hospital Pediatric Transgender Center.
I just wanted to make sure that we get that out there and on the air, because people are going to ask if we don't state it out there, right? Like, I want these people known that this is what they are doing, and this is what they're doing to families. Out of the children. And this is what's
not... The center has been closed.
It, in my opinion, it doesn't mean that there's still not people that are out there floating that are responsible.
Does that make sense? Yes, it totally makes sense. But I do know that after I blew the whistle, the attorney general here in Missouri launched an investigation, and we did eventually pass law to shut this center down. But that does not mean that there are not centers still in half of this country still operating in the same way.
Bingo. There's centers operating in this country that are still operating in the same way. And in addition to that, you have parents that are still affected by this. Those hormone blockers, right? Like the puberty blockers, they have long-term effects, do they not? Like, even if you're only taking them for a short period of time, don't they affect the child, especially during that age as they're developing?
They do. And one of the things that's really problematic is we don't actually know all of the long-term effects. So we know that there's an effect on bone health, bone density. We actually now suspect that there is probably some long-term effect on IQ and brain cognition and long-term brain development. We were running an experiment on a whole group of kids, and we didn't even know the long-term outcomes.
that is probably one of the saddest things you could think of, because as a parent, you know, I don't want my kids smoking cigarettes. My parent, you know, if my kid, one of my kids comes to me and says, hey, I think I was born a paraplegic, I'm not going to go and break a couple of their legs or break their back. And yet we're doing that to our children. They can't smoke now until they're what, 21, I think, is like the new law across the United States of America. So how we're doing this is unreal. How many of those kids would come back, or how many of those parents would come back and they change their minds? I saw one of your videos where you had said you were testifying about, I believe it was an 18-year-old female that had already had a double mastectomy that ended up coming back and or had called you and was just crying over this. How many times would that happen?
It started to happen more and more, to the point where at one point we started a, you know, we started a whole spreadsheet of those who were detransitioning, or they were telling us, you should never have done this to me. There was a mom who reached out and said that she was demanding that we take the puberty blocker out of her child's arm. And we refused. We wouldn't even assist her. Her kid went from being on one mental health medication to, she said, a handful. She said, my child is a shell of their former self. This mom actually tried to go to general pediatrician's offices to just get this thing cut out of his arm, because it was an implant. We surgically had implanted it in his arm. It was after I blew the whistle that she finally was able to get the hospital to remove it. And her child no longer identifies as trans and is a happy, healthy young man. But we had completely started him on a pathway that would have fundamentally destroyed his health.
Okay, so then the next question would be, if a parent's coming to you saying, I want this removed out of my child's arm, get it out now, and the hospital's refusing to do it, I can think of two potential reasons for that. One being greed, and the other one being an ideology. In your opinion, which one do you think it is?
It's an ideology. It's a complete...
The ideology.
Yeah. I mean, made money for the hospital, but the reason why... the clinicians, why we couldn't stop and pause and go, hey, this is not the same group of kids we thought we were setting this up for, or there's kids who are being harmed. We would not stop at any point because it was a complete ideology.
So the hospital's closed down. Did anybody lose their medical license?
No. In fact, the primary endocrinologist that I worked with left the state of Missouri when the law was passed and moved to Colorado. He continued to medically transition kids in the state of Colorado. Just now, because at the federal level, they are starting to try to cut off funding to hospitals that continue to do this, it is believed that the hospital he moved to will stop medically transitioning kids. But no one has lost their medical license. I mean, we're still playing out one of the greatest medical scandals of our lifetime. We're right in the middle of it right now.
How many patients was the hospital seeing and doing this to, like on average? How many patients were rotating through the clinic on a daily basis that are starting transitioning? Just out of curiosity, maybe we can get to like a scope of this.
Yeah. So in my tenure, there was about 1,500 patients and 80% of them were put on a medical pathway. And that was just in St. Louis region. This is not even one of the largest hospital settings. This is in Missouri. So if you imagine what's going on in the state of New York or the state of California or Washington or Oregon, the scale is unprecedented for how many kids have been harmed by this.
You said 80% end up getting put on a medical pathway. So is that normal in the medical field to have 80% of patients that come in that claim that they have a certain medical condition and that the doctors agree with them and start them on life altering medication?
No. So the reason why it was 80% is that some of those kids were not just of the age yet to even start. So it wasn't that we were saying no to 20%. 20% were not yet of the age, or potentially they might have had a parent who was successful in a custody fight. Some of them, a small number, did not want medicine, like a medical pathway themselves. But for the most part, if you came to that center and said, I identify as trans and I want to be put on these interventions, you would leave with a prescription. And that is not how medicine works. If you imagine what if a whole group of kids decided that they had a malignant cancer that needed chemotherapy? And we just decided, if you said you needed it as a kid, we're going to put you on chemo. Like, that's basically what we were doing.
That is ridiculously insane. Let me ask you another question. Did you all get follow-ups from parents on mental health issues? You had mentioned it earlier that there was one parent that was complaining that, yeah, my kid's on all of these now other medications due to mental health concerns. Did y'all get follow-ups on suicides and things of that nature that were taking place? I'm sorry if this is a disturbing conversation to have, but I think it's important to have for the American population.
So for the most part, there is a large myth that surrounds this idea that trans-identified individuals or kids have a high risk of completed suicide. They don't. They have a high rate of suicidal ideation, so they think about it, or they at least report that they think about it. But we actually did not see any high number at all of completed suicides. In fact, now that I'm on this side and I've looked at the data more, it's more concerning that people who are put on this medical pathway are the ones who end up often having higher rates of completed suicide. It's not those who are coming in. And also, there was very little evidence. There is very little evidence that this actually treats a mental health condition. There's no good evidence to support its use for depression or anxiety or suicidal ideation. The evidence simply doesn't back that up.
So there was no change that you would see in your patients if they had already came in with depression, if they'd already came in with suicidal ideation.
Sometimes they're getting worse. They were getting worse.
What would you say is the worst state right now that people need to pay attention to and look into? If they're parents and they're looking at with bringing people in here, what would be your warning to those parents? Like, what state and what would your warning be to anybody considering doing this right now?
State-wise, unfortunately, it's almost every blue state is still continuing on this pathway, full-throated. For parents, I would say the minute that if they have a child claim a trans identification, I would get them assistance or help that is not anywhere near a gender center.
So it's the gender centers that are the big issue over there.
Taking
them to a clinical psychologist, anything like that, because, I mean, don't take them to a gender center because there's a high probability that they're going to end up getting put on some path of treatment. And no, it's okay. It looks like we lost her. That was incredibly eye-opening. I'm not sure what. Oh, there she is. She is here. Okay. Sorry. I thought I lost you.
Just the dog.
Oh, that'll happen when you have puppies. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for what you do. Seriously. Thank you. Because there's not that much. You were the first person I've really seen coming out and speaking out. Where can people find you at? Where can people find this information?
On X, I'm at Jamie Whistle. And I run an organization now fighting this in all 50 states. It's the LGB Courage Coalition, and you can find us on all social media platforms.
Yeah, and that's something else that we need to bring up. This is not an issue as far as whether you're straight, homosexual, or anything. It's literally harm and care for children. We need to take care of those kids. Thank you very much for coming on, and thank you for all of your time, and thank you for speaking out. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Now, this new product is incredible. It's from our sponsor, Bigly, at theolishowstore.com. Optimal Human, you love the green powder, super nutrient, the very best out there. Well, this is Optimal Human Nootropic called Mind Fuel. Introducing Mind Fuel, a super healthy, super strong energy nootropic adaptogen, which doesn't make you sick, doesn't have a letdown. It is incredible. Not just a few of the bottles. Look how many bottles are in there. And I only drink about half a bottle a day. It's so strong. Look at that right there, ladies and gentlemen. So that's what comes in each box of this. and it is simply amazing. Osmo Human Nootropic Mind Fuel is here. This clean, caffeine-free energy shot is designed for clear thinking, steady focus, and zero compromise. It's time to abandon sugary energy drinks and stimulant-heavy formulas in favor of clean, functional, nootropic-based energy. Zero calories, sugar-free, no crash, no blood sugar spike, can be used daily without any guilt. Caffeine-free formula, smooth, clean energy, ideal for caffeine-sensitive users and late-day use. It's also got all these other incredible compounds like citicoline, alpha-GPC, GABA, supports mental clarity and focus. It appeals to both biohackers and holistic consumers, high-quality electrolytes and B vitamins. More than a brain shot, true functional fuel. Optimal Human Nootropic Mind Fuel, that's the name of the product, isn't just another energy product. It's a smarter alternative for consumers who demand clarity, control, and clean performance without compromise. Get 25% off for life when you become a subscriber, canceling time for free. Get Mind Fuel down at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you've never tried the original superfood greens, Optimal Human, you really want to get this as well. It's the best green food I've ever had at thealexjonesstore.com. The widest selection of Patriot apparel, all sorts of cool collectible knives and more. And that's what funds us, and that's what does this. And I really appreciate your support because I can't do it without you. So I want to commend and thank the listeners. But just like I steered you right on gold and silver 2.5 years ago, I got out of the market before that. I said, now's the time. I was totally right. Just like I steer you right on politics, these products are incredible. Get our ultramethylene blue. It is the best in the market. Our Shilajit is the best. Our Irish Sea Moss is the best. Our turmeric is the strongest. Ultimate turmeric, thealexjonesstore.com. You are missing out. You don't get it. I want to thank those that have supported. I want to challenge those that haven't. What are you waiting for?
Just what I needed for my morning jog.
Working 12 to 13 hours a day, Mind Fuel keeps me on my toes and in the action.
Try this energy shot for a boost like no other. Power your mind and body today.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know the power of turmeric, but have you felt it? Have you tried the ultimate turmeric gummies? The delicious way to harness the ancient power of golden turmeric, supercharged with ginger root and black pepper for maximum impact. Each gummy delivers 125 milligrams of premium turmeric extract packed with curcumin, the clinically studied compound shown to support healthy inflammation response, ease everyday aches, and promote joint comfort so you can move through life with ease. We added real ginger root, trusted for centuries to calm digestion and soothe the stomach, plus a precise dose of black pepper extract with pepperine, proven to boost curcumin absorption by up to 2,000%. That means more of the good stuff actually gets where your body needs it. No capsules, no bitter aftertaste, just one tasty tropical-flavored gummy a day, or two if you're feeling extra, to help you feel lighter, looser, and more energized. Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, ancient wisdom meets modern science in the best-tasting form possible. Grab yours today and start feeling the ultimate difference in health. With Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, inflammation doesn't stand a chance. Get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. Donald Trump says that our border is secure. Not sure where he gets that from, especially when you listen to our next guest. Just yesterday, Trump came out and he made this statement on the border, claiming that it was secure. Let's go ahead and play that clip for him of Trump just telling us how secure the border is.
The border is totally secure. You know, you forget. We had a border that I inherited where millions of people were coming through. Now we have a border where no one is coming through. They come into our country only legally. So you have to remember those things. You know, people forget as soon as you accomplish something, it goes into history and nobody ever wants to talk about it. We had a border that caused all of this problem. Biden caused, and the Democrats caused this problem. They allowed tens of millions of people to come in. Many of them were murderers. Many were drug dealers, drug addicts, people from mental institutions. They allowed these people to violate our country, to come into our country. And that's...
You know, I don't, I don't think anybody's going to debate what Donald Trump just said about the Democrats allowing people to come in and violate our country. But I think maybe it's more about the policies of the United States and the message that we're sending. Instead of having the CBP One app just welcoming people to apply for asylum, no, we turned it into the CBP Home app and told them that they could go home. Also, we have cases like this that I have here in my hand. Abdul Dahir Ibrahim. Abdul was one of those ones that was caught up in all of the fraud over in Minnesota that I think Donald Trump even said is now north of like $20 billion, the last figure I heard. This guy ended up entering into the United States in 89 at 14 years old. He went up to Canada, lied about his name, applied for asylum, and then he ended up getting denied. There he is up on your screen pictured with Ilhan Omar. Canada then deports him back to the United States of America, doesn't send him back to Somalia. No, he comes into the United States of America. In the USA, what do? Well, we release him back into the wild. Shortly thereafter, he decides he's going to head back to Canada, lies about his name, applies for asylum, and they end up throwing him in jail for 3 months. Now, you would think at that point Canada would do something with him, maybe send him back to Somalia. But no, instead, they bring him back here into the United States of America in 1993. We get him back, and he's out running wild on the street. Somehow, he ends up becoming friends with Ilhan Omar, but that's not where his story ends. In 96, he attempted to re-enter Canada underneath another false name, but Canada denied him entry, so we held on to him. And then he decided he was going to go to California and apply for asylum in California in 98. I can't make this up, and his story's so ridiculous, I actually have to read it. It's not even something I can memorize. So he goes to California and applies for asylum. Now, mind you, he originally came to the United States in 1993, and now we're in 1998. He's been kicked out of Canada twice, thrown in jail in Canada, brought back to the United States, running around in the dang streets. He lies. He ends up claiming he has a wife and children. Turns out it's his sister. He ends up finally getting like a order of deportation, but not after, you know, applying to have it appealed and so on and so forth. And it just continues on forever. He's in 2001, after more than 10 years, USA finally issued an order of removal for him. It's wild, but he remained here and he continued to appeal. And there he was pictured with Ilhan Omar. Well, the border issue is one thing. Us changing our policies is another, sending the appropriate message. And now my next guest that I have coming up is going to be Corey Gutero. He runs a GOAT initiative inside of Southern California, outside of San Diego. And he's been on the border for a very long time, collecting a heck of a lot of evidence. Corey sent me some stuff the other day, some pretty troubling videos, some pretty troubling pictures, some that I can't show you because from what we've been told, there's an current investigation on this subject. And that would be the Mexican army actually stepping foot on American soil here in the United States. And to talk more with me about it, ladies and gentlemen, I'm bringing up Corey Gutero. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
I said Gutero. It's actually Gutero, isn't it?
That's where the goat comes from.
Yeah, it's my mistake, man. I always forget. It was good to see you again, buddy. So how did this happen? What are you hearing? How is it that the Mexican army made it onto U.S. soil?
I feel like I'm living in this false reality at this point because we're still finding all this stuff. We're still all this stuff, meaning passports, birth certificates. Just over the last weekend, we found a new cell phone from China. It's Huawei or however you pronounce it. Plug that thing into the charger. Fires right up.
Mm-hmm.
We have over 50 cell phones now. This stuff is just absolutely insane. We've got a ton of cameras out at the border, so we still see people crossing. We call it in to the different stations when we see people crossing. But I saw the clip that you played of the president telling everyone that the border's secure. I mean, I remember Mayorkas saying that. I remember Kamala saying that. I remember Biden saying that. At what point are we going to say that where it actually means something? Because it means nothing anymore.
Yeah, it quite literally means nothing. And I forgot to mention this in your introduction. It's not like you're a nobody either. You've spoken before. You've testified before Congress, have you not?
I have. I mean, I would say that I'm a nobody, but
how many people in America testify before Congress, man? I appreciate the humbleness, but for the love of God, you've testified before Congress. You've shown Tulsi Gabbard around the border along with several other people. It's wide open.
We did a very long tour before President Trump got elected of showing these people the problem. And excuse me. So I'm from San Diego. I grew up here. The only time I left was for college and when I was in the army, and then I came right back This is my home. East County, East San Diego is my home. I'm not going anywhere. I have a business here. My family's here. And I love it here. The border, being near the border is always interesting. And so there's always stuff going on. But I know these areas like the back of my hand. I grew up drinking beer out on all these backcountry roads out here. And I know some people think that's silly because we're in San Diego, but a lot of these places in rural San Diego County are some of the, it's 4,000 feet elevation. It's freezing cold at night. These people are starting fires. The illegals are starting fires, leaving them. They get up to move during the day, 60 mile an hour winds. That's why we have all these bad Santa Ana fires here. It'll snow in some of these places. So we have all kinds of different terrain. It is a harsh environment for the illegals, for the Border Patrol. There's tons of areas where the radio signal is just non-existent because in these canyons. So it's very hard to actually secure the border, especially when we have for the force, DHS in general, they're all over the country right now, just deporting anyone, everyone they can, which I don't necessarily disagree with, but everyone has forgotten about the actual border. People are still coming. And as you brought up, the Mexican army's coming through. It's insane.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and throw that picture up on the screen, of the blurred out image, that you ended up sharing over on social media for, so the folks at home can see this. And it's blurred out for a reason, came from a security camera that's placed up over on the border. And, It's kind of a bit of an issue when we start talking about how blurred the sucker is. And I'll be honest with you, unless you shared with me the videos and the photographs that you did, I wouldn't have believed it. But I didn't just look at the uniforms. I looked at the weapons and equipment that they're carrying, and I looked at the nature in which they're walking and what they're doing, how they're holding their weapons, all of that stuff. And this image is exceptionally blurred out that we have. But, you know, we've since known that now it appears that there's an open investigation that's going on into CBP. I believe you said it was a CBP supervisor that ended up authorizing this madness. And the craziest part is that it was on the same day that I can't remember his name off the top of my head. The guy from the FBI's top 10 most wanted ended up getting picked up at the U.S. Embassy down inside Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Wedding. It was interesting because it was the same day. So I'm like, wait. Did this dude just try to walk through the border right here? Is that why they're sending these people across to come look for him? It was just, I have never seen them come that far to the north on purpose. So it wasn't an accident. You know, in some areas, there's a lot of places where there's miles in San Diego where there's no wall, no fence, nothing. And you could theoretically accidentally walk too far south, too far north. I've heard of stories in Arizona and Texas where Mexican military came too far north or our guys went too far south and they got in a little bit of trouble, but never on like a specific mission looking for someone. So for 4 years, the last 4 years or during the Biden administration, when all of this stuff started taking place, basically in my backyard, we started looking into all this crap, basically. And mm-hmm. we were, While DHS was not doing their job for 4 years, I'm like, well, someone has to pick this stuff up. Someone has to go talk to the neighbors, figure out what the hell's going on. So DHS has lost the power of working with the locals on the north side of the border, our side of the border. But TGI has moved into that role. So we not only have sources within DHS and local, state, federal agencies, but all the locals along the border, a lot of times, it's kind of frustrating to me, they will call me before they will call Border Patrol, and then I will call Border Patrol. But this story that you're talking about right now, the Mexican military, I've heard this from two different sources who don't know each other, and we have the pictures to prove it. We can't show the pictures because it is under investigation right now, which obviously has nothing to do with me, but I still try to maintain, our sources are incredibly valuable because of the information that we get that sometimes we're able to put the bad guys away. This is important because we cannot have another foreign military, if that's what it was. I mean, we don't know if it was a cartel. We know CJNG, they have been caught with Mexican military uniforms. So realistically, we don't know who the hell it was.
Well, I mean, you said something interesting as well, which is you said that they were searching for somebody. Is that what you heard? They're searching for somebody. So they're searching for somebody on U.S. soil. There was no U.S. federal officer presence, correct? There was nobody from DHS that was alongside of them. Not that in the video I saw, not in the photographs, none. No federal officers. Correct. And these men are armed. And so that leads me to my next point. If they were actually looking for somebody armed on U.S. soil and to tell the people at home, because we can't show it, it appeared most certainly that they were on private property and shaking door handles. That is absolutely insane, because a U.S. citizen seeing that could shoot that person, and then we have another issue. Or we could have, I don't know, them shoot a U.S. citizen and have a completely different issue on our hand. But probably the biggest tell to me that this was not properly coordinated is, never in my wildest dreams would I ever even imagine a scenario where it would be legal for the United States to approve of all militaries, the Mexican military, to come over on the U.S. side of the border. And like you said, it was the same day that Wedding ended up turning himself in down south in Mexico. And so then the question is, well, why would Wedding turn himself in? And I look at that and I say, if Wedding turned himself in, he's probably rolling over on some people. His life was probably in danger, and he's probably going to use the information that he has to maybe harm some of his adversaries. And I'm not so sure, even though the uniforms and the weapons matched up, that it was even the Mexican military, that it was the cartel that was dressed up as the Mexican military, and that you might have a dirty, dirty CBP agent in there.
Yeah. And, well, you made a good point as to, even if it was approved, well, would that ever get approved? Another military coming across the border onto U.S. soil to look for somebody?
We would be leading that operation. It's U.S. soil. You're still going to have to have a warrant. You're going to have to have all sorts of stuff in order to make that happen when you're on private property, especially when you saw them, man, just yanking on door handles. This is the United States of America, and it's certainly not going to be led by the Mexican army. It's going to be led by United States forces of some kind, definitely not the military. A law enforcement agency is going to be leading that, depending on what jurisdiction it's going to fall into. And so for the Mexican army to be coming across, it's a problem. And people were given stand down orders, told not to intervene with them, to let them basically do their thing, correct?
Correct. Correct. And then the other issue is, so while my team was not out there at the time, what if we were? And the things you brought up there, what in the hell am I supposed to do with my team if we come around the corner and the Mexican military is right there with the rifles?
I mean, you get shot or shoot back, because I don't think it was the Mexican military. Even though they were armed and certainly looks like it and the uniforms matched, that doesn't seem like a coordinated government activity to me. That seems like somebody put in a phone call to a friend and then somebody gave an illegal order. That's what it seems like to me, to ignore them on U.S. soil, because you're putting civilian lives at risk the moment you do that. That's insanity. Have you heard back from CBP, DHS, anybody for actual statements on this, to actually owning up to it, admitting to it?
It's been deathly quiet. And I would like them to understand is that I'm not a police auditor, right? I would say that I'm on the same side 99.9% of the time with what they're doing. But if someone's doing something egregiously wrong, like letting a foreign military come into our country, someone's got to speak up. And we know from 4 years of no one speaking up, that's not true. There was a Border Patrol commander, I forgot his rank, who testified in Congress right after he retired. That's not what I mean by speaking up. I mean, speaking up when the problem is occurring. If they're not going to do it, then I will just continue to do it. And I'm not trying to piss anybody off over there, because we have a very good relationship with them. But holy shit, you can't let guys from another country come into our country with guns and uniforms, period.
And shake our door handles. And to me, that whoever that is, like, you know, you had stated that it's, I'm not here to, you know, like, be a law enforcement officer, anything. No, you've actually worked hand in hand and done some very good work in helping to keep the United States border secure. Taking your personal time, you've got a nonprofit set up, correct, in order to make this happen.
Correct.
Yeah. Correct. And you are devoting your life. I know how much work you put into this. And there is a good respect for you amongst DHS agents over there. And so for them to come back at, or for even anybody to try to make the statement that says that you are trying to go against law enforcement in this case, or you're trying to be some sort of auditor in this case, is absurd. That person that did that, that person that told anybody under their purview not to engage, to ignore it, to leave it alone, that's not somebody that's on our side. Because I'm fairly confident that's not a legal order to give. Fairly confident. I was never a federal law enforcement officer, but I do know how the Constitution of the United States works. And I'm pretty sure we shouldn't have foreign militaries entering our country armed, shaking U.S. door handles.
And we spoke about this a couple of days ago where I asked you in your capacity or in some kind of federal capacity that you've ever been in. When you go to another country, when you go down to Mexico for work, actual work, looking at a crime scene or whatever it is, we talked about, are you allowed to have a gun versus are you not? And then, I don't know, that was interesting to me how you explained it to me.
Yeah, it depends. Depending on the country that you end up going into, you end up getting permits for these things, right? So if a federal law enforcement officer or anybody like that is going to be flying into another country, I know certainly when I've gone into other countries in a military capacity, depending on the country I was going in, the role I'm going in, we would have to get our passport stamped and we would have to get specific permits from that country in order to carry firearms inside of that country, whether or not they were concealed or open carried. So it just depends. And I would assume for law enforcement officers, unless there's some joint agreement or something, mutual aid agreement that goes into place there, that it's going to be the exact same thing. But at no time would I see us ever allowing, especially unsupervised. And by the way, in these cases, you're not taking the lead in that country, right? Like if we're going over into Mexico for something like that, first of all, U.S. is not allowed to go inside of Mexico and just start arresting people. It's not allowed. That's why this guy had to turn himself into the embassy. Second, if something like that was to take place, 99.9% of the time, that host nation is going to be the one taking the lead. This situation is egregious enough. And I would hate to waste these last few minutes that I have with you and not talk about the other issues that are taking place in this country with everything that's going on. Because what you have seen on the border, I don't think most people, this is just one tiny situation, a chunk of the United States border that we're talking about with armed men dressed in Mexican military uniforms coming over. But there's a bunch of people in this country right now that are all for just wide open borders. And what they don't understand is that the cartel controls pretty much all of the movement across the border. Do me a favor, Corey. Explain how many of these people end up falling in human trafficking, the type of evidence that you've seen. Explain to them what the rape trees are down on the border, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I actually talked about this when I testified in Congress, all of these different issues. But 8 out of 10 migrant or illegal alien women who come across the border are sexually assaulted. I don't hear the left screaming about that. I don't see the left starting signal chats the border trying to help these women and children. What I do see is the left putting out their water bottles and food still today, NGOs. And my mom always has to remind me, you got to tell people what an NGO is because I have to look it up every time. So NGO is a non-government organization where they fill in sometimes where the government is falling short, but falling short depending upon your definition of falling short. For these NGOs, falling short means we're not helping the illegals enough. Now, I was a respiratory therapist. I was in healthcare. I don't want to see anybody die. But at the same time, if you keep feeding the birds, they keep coming. So I don't know why we let these NGOs back in these areas that are nobody's supposed to be in at this point. And one of these, this stuff, the Mexican military thing is just a drop in the bucket. Weird stuff happens every week at the border. The rape trees that we have pictures of, they're more bushes in San Diego, not really trees, but it's these cartel members use them as trophies. So they will take the women's underwear, bras, and they throw them on these, you'll be walking down, you just see a bush full of bras and underwear, and it's like a conquest for them. It's disgusting. And again, I don't see the left anywhere out there helping these people. I see us. If we see women and children, I'm not picking them up in a vehicle, or I will call it in. I will make sure they're okay. We'll give them some water. I'm not leaving water out there for them, but I don't want anybody to die. I want most people to die. And then the cell phones, we're still finding passports, two Pakistani passports just 2 weeks ago. And I mean, everybody on my team has kids.
You're talking passports and things like that, but also maybe explain to them the major national security threat. A lot of people don't know how many foreign terror organizations actually reside inside Pakistan, but there's a really good example that I think you have, which was the cell phones that you guys broke into that had specifically or unlocked that specifically, in some of these messages talked about Chinese nationals recruiting spies in the United States of America in order to spy on naval stations, correct?
Correct. And so one of the first cell phones we got into, it just seems like a joke, but it's not. The password was 123456. It opened right up. And that led to that is where we dove in, because we're now in about 200 different Telegram chats from that one cell phone, addresses, phone numbers, pictures. In one of the chats alone, there's about 30,000 pictures, about 5,000 videos, and there's a bunch of hundreds of files that they put in there. And that's one out of about 200. And that's the Chinese one. There's Azerbaijan, Pakistan, Ukraine, Russia, all these different chats telling these people where to come in. And one of the, you know, I don't speak Mandarin, but, I was reading through this chat one day. I finally figured out how to translate it, but translated it almost in real time. But one of them, the main chats was talking about everything that you just brought up, taking pictures of the naval base, Coronado and Point Magoo, taking pictures of the gates and fences around, the Starlink, different Starlink bases or, what's it called? Tesla, all kinds of different critical infrastructure that these different Chinese people are using as a repository of information. I've just now started to build a map with all these different points on there, and it's critical infrastructure pictures of them from all over the country. And most people would say, hey, they just got here. They're taking a picture of the Golden Gate Bridge, Coronado Bridge, right? Yeah. That's exciting. Well, not when you have 30,000 people taking pictures of different critical infrastructure across the entire country.
Yeah.
It doesn't sense, but.
I want to thank you for coming onto the show and sharing this information. You are a reputable human being, whether or not you realize it or not, you are, right? Not everybody gets to testify before Congress. Where can people find you, sir? And how can they donate and help you out for what you are doing to help secure the U.S. border?
Thank you. It's the goatinitiative.org. I'm the Corey Goat on X, and it's Goat Initiative on X. We could use all the help we could get at this point. We have taken the place for DHS's failure over the previous 4 years. So anything you donate goes straight to the team.
Corey, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate having you on.
I'm jacked up on the methylene blue. It's the best thing you guys have ever had.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well.
And yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
I do subscribe to the methylene blue. Feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the methylene blue, and it is freaking awesome. I actually subscribe monthly now to it, and I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
About 15 minutes ago, I took
10 drops of the Ultimate Methylene Blue. Definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now.
I must say that it does a damn good job.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the Methylene Blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at theolishowstore.com.
Angry cops. We're going to be talking about the Alex Priddy shooting and the legalities behind it. I'll give you my opinion on whether or not I think it's right or wrong, whether or not I think these officers are going to get in trouble, whether they're going to get charged. But before we even get into that, I want to talk to you guys about this fundraiser that ended up being put out for Mr. Priddy. So far, they've raised over $1.6 million for him, which is insane to me. And I started looking into not just his GoFundMe, but also the funding behind the GoFundMe and where the money is going to be going. And in particular on this one, who the largest donor was that went into it. And it turns out this largest donor that ended up donating $25,000. You guys can see it right up there on your screen from Figs Scrubs. Well, Fig Scrubs also happens to have a CEO that used to work over at Blackstone prior to founding Fig Scrubs, their major uniform supplier throughout the healthcare industry. Of course, you know, Mr. Priddy, he used to be a nurse before he decided it would be a good idea to play the room temperature challenge with federal officers. So good on him for doing that. And you would think that that $1.6 million would go to helping him out. Maybe it'd go to his family, but at the very bottom of his GoFundMe, written all the way down there, you wouldn't believe it. They have a statement. It's only three paragraphs long, and I question how many people even bothered doing it. It says, if for any reason the funds cannot be transferred to Alex's family, we will not direct the total amount to the Immigrant Defense Project, a nonprofit that provides litigation, advocacy, and community defense resources to help immigrants defend their rights and fight deportation. So, if they can't reach Alex's family and they can't get the money to him, they're just going to dump $1.6 million into the Immigrant Defense Project. That's way better than any other life insurance policy I've been made aware of. $1.6 mil going over to the Immigrant Defense Project. And it would seem as if he's also part of this whole Signalgate scandal, which to me is a bit of a problem. So there's that. Then we've got Ilhan Omar over inside Minnesota. Yesterday, she was assaulted by this man over here. He's not exactly the best guy on the planet either. He goes by the name of Anthony Kasmerick. He ended up squirting a syringe on her, a syringe full of some fluid, and they charged him with third-degree assault. Now everybody's out there screaming that, well, it's possible that this was an entire staged event. And while we can't prove motive, we can certainly see certain things. I want you guys to do me a favor here. There he is. Beautiful face he has. I want you to put up the clip of Ilhan Omar just staring at this gentleman prior to him being sprayed, because that most certainly did in fact happen before it ended up going up. Here you can see Ilhan Omar just sitting there, cautiously glancing down at him. The soon to be bad man that assaulted her with a syringe, plastic syringe full of some unknown fluid. And throughout this entire time, we can see her literally just staring at him. And this was broadcast on TV. All the TV cameras, pretty much the entire time, made sure they focused directly on him. He was always in frame. He's sitting up front. Now, it could be that the guy's just a weirdo and that Ilhan was looking at him going, yeah, I don't like the way he looks. He's just kind of a creepy looking guy. Possibly. Or she could have just been waiting for him to do this. It's entirely possible, I think, in my mind. Donald Trump even came out and said that he thinks it's fake. I would tend to agree with him. The whole thing looked like a giant show to me anyways. Other people have came out and pointed out that it is a felony to assault a member of Congress. So why is he only being charged with third degree assault? Why is she trying to draw attention away? I have absolutely no idea. His entire family is extremely left-leaning, by the way. His former wife apparently was a big grassroots organizer, from what I've heard, for Ilhan Omar. His children appear to be of, I don't even want to, you know, go off on kids, but I mean, they look crazy. I mean, they all look like they have just drinking the left's Kool-Aid since the day that they were born. I don't even think they got breast milk. I think they just got left Kool-Aid for lunch, breakfast, and dinner. I don't even think they gave them anything else. Well, coming up here in just a little bit, I'm going to have Richard High on the show, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you guys are ready for it. We're going to go over the Minneapolis shooting, and we're going to talk down exactly the legalities that go into it. You guys are looking forward to it, and I look forward to you calling in.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know the power of turmeric, but have you felt it? Have you tried the ultimate turmeric gummies, the delicious way to harness the ancient power of golden turmeric, supercharged with ginger root and black pepper for maximum impact? Each gummy delivers 125 milligrams of premium turmeric extract packed with curcumin, the clinically studied compound shown to support healthy inflammation response, ease everyday aches, and promote joint comfort so you can move through life with ease. We added real ginger root, trusted for centuries to calm digestion and soothe the stomach, plus a precise dose of black pepper extract with pepperine, proven to boost curcumin absorption by up to 2,000%. That means more of the good stuff actually gets where your body needs it. No capsules, no bitter aftertaste, just one tasty tropical-flavored gummy a day, or two if you're feeling extra, to help you feel lighter, looser, and more energized. Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, ancient wisdom meets modern science in the best-tasting form possible. Grab yours today and start feeling the ultimate difference in health. With Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, inflammation doesn't stand a chance. Get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Matt Tardio. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you guys are ready for this one, because I know some of you guys, I'm going to piss off, some of you guys are going to be extremely excited over the things I have to say. And there's just no other way around it. This seems to be one of those issues that's extremely divided. And when we have a president of the United States that can't even get his facts right, I don't even know what to tell you. Here's Donald Trump coming out stating that he shouldn't have even been carrying a gun. Let's go ahead and play that clip for him.
I haven't heard that, but certainly shouldn't have been carrying a gun. But all of, hey, look, bottom line, everybody in this room, we view that as a very unfortunate incident, okay? Right. Everyone, right. Unless you're a stupid person, very, very unfortunate incident. I don't like that he had a gun. I don't like that he had two fully loaded magazines. That's a lot of bad stuff. And despite that, I say that's a very unfortunate incident.
Well, yeah, very, very unfortunate. And maybe it's very unfortunate that he's got a director of the FBI that's feeding him some bad information as well. Apparently, the president of the United States doesn't, well, he said he shouldn't have been. He didn't say he can't do it. But you know who did say he couldn't do it? That would be the director of the FBI, Cash Patel. Let's go ahead and play that clip for people at home.
You do that anywhere, this FBI is going to be following, leading the charge to arrest those.
But how was he threatening Border Patrol? You've collected the evidence, you said, right? You have the handgun in your possession?
That's right.
And how was he using that handgun in terms of threatening Border Patrol? What was the threat? He had his camera, right? He was filming it.
That's something that I will let the DHS and the prosecutors, because they are the ones investigating that case. I don't want to stylize that evidence. But I trust the men and women on the ground who are trained professionals to only use it when it's absolutely necessary. And I trust Secretary Noem's leadership and DHS and HSI to do the right thing, as they've always done in these scenarios. As Christy said, you cannot bring a firearm loaded with multiple magazines to any sort of protest that you want. It's that simple. You don't have that right to break the law and incite violence.
Oh, well, it turns out you do have that right. The FBI doesn't enforce state statutes. And as a matter of fact, over inside the great state of Minnesota, I looked up the law. It turns out that you can carry a gun to a protest over there. I couldn't find anything in the statutes that says otherwise. So he would have been legally carrying. Now, there's the argument that he didn't have his license on him, and he didn't have his license to carry on him. All of that aside, none of that technically really matters when we look at the legalities of the shooting. And here to help me break it down is Richard High. You guys might know him as Angry Cops. Man is a legend, and I'm so happy to have him on the show. Rich, sir, thank you for taking the time and coming on the show.
Yeah, man. Glad I could be here and help break some stuff down.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So let's just go dive right into it. But before we even do that, do you have any preconceived notions about this? I know when I first talked to you about this, you were kind of saying that you don't really have all the facts. You looked at it the same way I did. We don't really have all the facts as far as it goes. Has your mind changed on this?
Yeah. Yeah, it has. There's been so many, one of the difficult things about policing now is that there's cameras everywhere. But one of the best things about policing now is that there's cameras everywhere. Right?
Right.
So whenever you have a singular incident like this happened, everybody's got their phone out, including our quote unquote, the victim or the deceased, right? You're going to get a million different angles. And the first day we had one, maybe two. Mm-hmm. And then within a couple hours of that and the following days came in, you had umpteen different angles, umpteen different slowdowns. Unfortunately, you had a whole bunch of AI assisting in some of these things and making fools out of a lot of people, quite frankly. But in the end, kind of slowing everything down, looking at, I think it was like 5 minutes before the shooting happened when he was in the middle of the road, being told to move. And then you see the engagement that ended his life, where it's the pepper spray, the falling over one another, and then the detainment and arrest leading to then the shots fired. Awful, but awful is the phrase that comes to mind. It looks sloppy. It looks like bad tactics used by the ICE agents and crowd control. But it looked like a lawful shoot. Once detained, you have a firearm. You then fight with officers. Somebody yells gun. Individuals have a reasonable belief to think that they may be under a threat of physical violence, potentially not fatal violence. I forget what the term.
Lethal force.
Lethal force.
Serious or great bodily injury. Yeah.
So then lethal force is authorized. And if you have that reasonable belief, that lethal force is authorized, that, you know, your person, your other agents are in imminent danger of loss of life, limb, eyesight, you're going to react as if, well, that's the case, and then fire. Now, you can say that the removal of the pistol and the SIG going off there was on its own because it's a SIG P320, which is its own. Yeah, I know, right? Everybody who knows the SIG P320, even the president said something about it, which makes you go, well. Could have been that, or it could have been poor trigger discipline by the ICE agent. Either way, the agents that are involved that hear gun and then hear a gunshot, reacting to that gunshot with lethal force is completely authorized. Now, like I said before, poor tactics? Yes. Bad shoot? No. It's a good shoot. When I say good shoot, I mean it's a legal shoot.
Right. And so
we can go further into detail into that, but.
Well, we'll talk about that here in just a minute because we got a couple minutes left. One of the first things that we look at, you know, and it goes back to the fruit of the poisonous tree type deal, right? If they didn't have a legal reason for contact, a legal reason to even detain the guy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, then we've got an issue, right? So that's the first thing I'm going to go to. Did those officers have a legal reason in order to contact him? And from what we can tell from the video footage that's already out there on the street, they did, in fact, have a legal reason to contact him. We know they were there in the area on official business. It appears that they told him to move back and he was disobeying those lawful orders. And there's a misconception that's been floated around, especially on social media, that ICE agents cannot detain or arrest U.S. citizens. And that's false. They can. They absolutely can if they're breaking federal law. Those are federal law enforcement officers. If you are violating federal law or if you assault, which we'll get to in a second, if you assault a federal law enforcement officer, you absolutely can be detained by an ICE agent, right? Same thing with obstructing. So when they're disobeying those lawful orders, he's not moving back. At that point, they have, number one, reason to detain him, and two, possibility underneath obstruction in order to arrest him. Would you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree. And I would point to the several minutes before the physical engagement that you see where he loses his life. He was already in the middle of the road, contacted by – it was a thicker guy. The individual that maced him was like a skinnier ICE agent. There was a larger, you know, more studly dude that was in the middle of the road with him, pushing him back, saying, hey, you need to get out of the road, pushing him back physically off the road towards the sidewalk. Then what happens? 2 minutes later, he reengages, right? So you've already got the obstruction. You already have the information given to the individual by officers. Hey, you're obstructing. You could be arrested. You need to move back. He ignores those. Reengages officers, gets the pepper spray.
And well, then first he gets shoved back.
The tussle happened.
First he gets shoved back, right. So if you guys wouldn't mind for me throwing this up on the screen, there's an image I have, a still image of where he's actually shoving one of the federal officers. So the officers end up, they go and they push him back. And then one of the other officers goes to push a lady out of the way. So they're treating all of these people the exact same way. They were pushing him back. They were using force on him. And then they went over and they were pushing a lady back. And the moment they went to push the lady back, this suspect goes up and gets in the face of the ICE officer and puts his hands on him and appears as if he's pushing back from two different angles. Now, to the best of my knowledge, that's assault on a law enforcement officer. You're at that point, you put your hands on, there it is right there. He goes in. And what the witnesses are stating is that he was trying to defend that woman who is being assaulted by the law enforcement officer, allegedly. That's what the witness states. He was trying to defend the woman when he pushed that cop in that moment and got up in there and pushed him back. And at that point, you're assaulting a law enforcement officer. And I haven't even bothered even looking whether or not it's a felony under federal law, but it's a felony pretty much in every other place I've looked. So I would assume so.
Not in New York.
Either way, it's going to be a crime. Not in New York? Really?
No.
Probably California.
No, you can whoop my ass in New York. You'll get a misdemeanor. Thanks, Kathy Hochul and our AG, Letitia James. Don't even get me started.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. So besides communist New York and probably places like California, but I'm pretty sure federal law is going to be a felony, right? Let's not even say it's a misdemeanor. Despite what Don Lemon thinks, misdemeanors are crimes and you can get arrested for committing crimes, even if it's crossing the border, right? So anyways, he assaults. At that point, they have a legal reason to arrest him and at a bare minimum detain him at that point. They could have detained him just out of safety concerns because he's not following orders. And they need to control
even the obstruction. He's already been told to get out of the street. He's intervening in the middle of an arrest or detainment. You've got obstruction right there.
Right. So now let's talk about the tussle that ends up taking place. At one point during the tussle, they end up hearing gun. One of the officers, I'm not sure who it is, shouts gun. The officer who we now assume ended up pulling the trigger upon hearing gun. You see him back away. He was looking over behind, kind of, you know, acting almost like a cover officer for a moment, and he hears gun. And you see him tune in, and then he reaches down into his holster, and he starts to pull the gun out of his holster. At the same time, the other agent ends up grabbing the suspect's firearm off of his belt loop and pulling it out off of his hip, pulls it out the holster, and starts to run away with the SIG. Now, you had mentioned it earlier, but maybe people that are watching this don't know it. The SIG 320, it's got issues. Right. You search this all over social media. You can depress that trigger like a millimeter and you start jiggling the slide and the dang thing goes boom. Right. The dang thing will just go boom. So there you've got the gun being removed off of him. And there you go. And there's that officer that likely fired that first fatal shot coming over behind him. And the problem is when you're in a high stress environment, and I don't care how long this officer has been on the force, I don't care how much stuff he has. The moment you hear gun and you start thinking it's a lethal situation, most people tend to get tunnel vision. And they start looking for things like clear line of sight. They start making sure they're not going to shoot their buddies. They're checking safety and everything else. Would you agree with that assessment? So there's a good probability that he didn't see the gun. And this is important.
Another thing to add into that is while these officers, while the officer says gun and is removing the firearm from the suspect, what is he still doing? He's still resisting.
He's still fighting. So right.
You hear gun. You are still engaging a resisting individual. That term gun from another officer is telling you, oh, he's got a gun. Nobody says gun because we're there with firearms. We bring a gun to every call that we're on.
Bingo.
But when you hear gun, and I've been in a bunch of tussles like this from another officer, that's him saying out loud, hey, this person is armed. We are already fighting them. And what happens? Alex continues to resist. Alex continues to give physical resistance to officers while they're trying to arrest him. And all the other officers know he's got a gun on him.
Right.
So,
and there's no telling if he has a second firearm or a second weapon on him.
That officer doesn't know. Plus one theory. Plus one theory is something that is taught in policing from day one in the academy. Just because there is one weapon does not mean that you're done searching an area. There could always be another one. And there's been numerous cases where I've been on the street conducting traffic stops or getting involved in gang activity where I'm searching an area and I find 1, 2, 3 firearms and 4 or 5 knives on individuals, like in different pockets and in their shoes, hidden under in their underwear. Just because one firearm is removed does not mean that a threat is over. And on top of that, you still have the individual resisting arrest, physically resisting officers.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's something that I point out to like my viewers over on my podcast, right? So here we've got a H&K VP9 on me, right? It's empty. H&K VP9. This is about the size of the firearm that he was carrying. P320. I don't own a SIG P320 because I know better. This is a 22LR pen gun. This thing right here shoots a 22LR projectile. This is also a firearm. It's legal to own. As long as you manufacture it yourself, You can't buy them anywhere, things like that. We've got different laws that ended up going into that, right? But that's a firearm. Not to mention you have knives and you have all sorts of other objects, and the cops also have firearms on them. And so when that cop hears that 320 go off, which is what I believe we're assuming at this point, is that it was the 320 that ended up going off. That would be the suspect's firearm that got removed from him. It's then reasonable for that officer to believe. And the reason I use the term reasonable goes down to different Supreme Court cases. And I've got a lot of them laid out over here in front of me. And what people do not realize is that the Supreme Court of the United States has affirmed time and time and time again that the simple fact that that firearm was removed off of him does not mean that police are not authorized to still use lethal force. Because what it really boils down to is the officer's perspective. And if the officer perceives a threat, if a reasonable officer in that officer's position would perceive that threat, then generally speaking, the Supreme Court is going to side with the officer. Am I right or am I wrong?
Oh, you're right. You're dead on. And how many officers there are aware that a firearm's in play? Numerous. Why? Because we communicate with one another. Gun. He's not just saying that so the crowd that's recording there can, you know, watch an execution happen. He's saying that because his buddies, including himself, need to understand that they are fighting with an armed suspect now.
Yeah, that's 100% what needs to go on right there, that they are fighting with an armed suspect. And the facts of the case will come out here in a little bit and determine why the officer decided to pull the trigger at that period of time. And people are pointing and saying, hey, it's a cell phone in his hand. And I think the other big thing that people don't realize is how quickly these situations end up evolving. And even the Supreme Court, I believe, has used that language, extremely intense and rapidly evolving environment, right? So by the time that the officer sees something in his hand, when a firearm has already been identified being on the suspect and he sees it in his hand, what people do not realize is that that potential firearm could be oriented and fired before the human body can perceive it and react to it, which generally speaking ends up getting people shot. Right. And 99.9% of times that there is a gun on you and you are resisting an arrest, there's a high probability you're going to end up dead or shot or wounded or severely injured by law enforcement. It's just a fact. Force will be used. And I don't think that this case is going to be any different.
An important thing that you brought up is the environment, right? People aren't really talking about the environment. They're just saying he's in a protest, right? He's in a protest and officers engaged him. And now that there's a fight, right? What's going on? You've got, we've all seen it, you know, the crazy pink haired ladies and dudes screaming at the top of their lungs, fascist. They're intentionally bringing bullhorns. They're using whistles, the high decibels, so then you can ruin our hearing so we can't hear anything. So the protesters are adding an additional intentional chaos to the incident because what do they want? They want the worst case scenario to happen, which is what ended up happening. So right. If people are going to say they need to communicate better, or there was a breakdown in communication or a lack of communication, and that's what caused this, and that's why the officers are to blame. Who's to blame for the lack of communication? None of the protesters there that are screaming fascists, that are blowing their whistles, that are using their bullhorns and intentionally creating a scene that is even more difficult to police? It's one of those things you have to think about is somebody that's out there that's protesting with some of these people or instigators, which, you know. That's another topic.
And we could talk about it, you know, number one, feds, they don't get enforced whether or not the guy is carrying a firearm legally within the state. That's not what they do, right? however, there is one aspect of this that I look at and I say there might be an issue here. And I kind of want to get your take on it of all things.
Shoot.
As the suspect is falling down to the ground after the first shot's fired, there is an officer that's backing away and continues to pump rounds into him while he's already laid down on the ground. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's going to be a good shoot? Supreme Court has said that it's based on a conscious act. And I'm pretty sure the individual that fired that second string of shots was not the first officer in the shooting. And so what's your take on that? Because a lot of people
it's one of the totality of the circumstances, right? When you have an incident where there's a shooting, all right, I think we both know that not everybody is, you know, a speed shooter. They're not drawn. They're not going to the middle of the town at noon, all right, to draw down on somebody. When you're involved in an altercation and somebody's firing rounds and you're going to try and stop the threat, quote unquote, right? Because at that moment, while rounds are being fired, officers are believing that that person is a threat to their lives, right? A legitimate threat because got a gun involved. We've heard a firearm go off. Now we're engaging. How long does it take that person to now unholster after disengaging from the individual to now put their sights on them and then fire? And then the totality of the environment, and this could be argued, but it'll likely fall on its face per previous Supreme Court rulings. I think the space between the shots are like 2 seconds. It's like 4 or 5 rounds in 2 seconds, a pause of a second and a half in 2 seconds, and then 3 rounds as he's moving. So one of the things that everybody's taught is you shoot to end the threat. If somebody fires, the firing pauses and the individual is still moving, it is legal to still continue to fire, but there still has to be a threat. Is he still reaching his waistband? Is he still going for the holster that you see on his hip? It's one of those things where the officer's, one, going to have to give a good interview on why he shot them. And two, you have to look at the totality of the circumstances and then the timeline in it. One of the things that people do online is they slow things down to where it's a millisecond. And you're like, see, she turned her tires to the right. That means that this is a total bad shoot and it's murder. No. Half a second is not something that you can base an individual's overall, is this a correct use of force, entire legal defense or prosecution on.
Oh, right. And coming up here in the next couple minutes, I'm actually have people call in and take some questions from them if they would like to call in. And the number to call in, by the way, is 867-789-2539. If you guys want to start calling in, start doing it right now and get your butt screen in there. I don't care if you guys want to argue. I don't care if you disagree or you guys just want information. You're more than welcome to do that. And Rich, if you got the time and you want to hang out, I forgot to tell you about it, but you're more than welcome to hang out and take calls if you got the time. But I'm just letting everybody know that I didn't give you that warning and I'm just calling you out on air being like, hey man, if you want, you're more than welcome to do it. But
how dare you
also have a life.
Of course.
Also have a life.
Force
me. Oh, great. This will be fun. Oh, I love this. This is going to be a good time. I really look forward to it then, man. Awesome. Awesome possum. All right, man. So let's talk about that one. Let's talk about the good shooting, because a lot of people
literally
just left before we go to commercial.
A good shoot and also
a good shoot.
Good with shot.
Yeah. A good shoot and good with shot. People do not understand how the law actually works. Can you explain to everybody why a motor vehicle, not that we should have to, wielded in the manner in which it was, is lethal force. And whether or not she angled her tires, it goes back to the same thing that we're talking about, whether or not the officer even knew the guy was disarmed or not. It's based on the officer perspective. So why is, I can't believe I have to say this, why is a motor vehicle considered a lethal weapon?
Well, to put it simply, it's a 2,000-pound bullet that you can steer. So if you don't want to be, if you think just off to the side of a firearm means you don't get to defend yourself, well, just barely in front of a vehicle, you also get to defend yourself. Like, I don't understand where that logic comes in. And maybe too many people have been hit by their significant other during a domestic when they run them over because they're upset because little Jimmy didn't get dropped off in time to school the following day, right? I get it. Maybe that's your lifestyle. But most people don't want to have a 2,000-pound vehicle pointed at them and then hear the engine go revving up and then say, well, you know what? Maybe I'm not in the exact right position in order to actually put these rounds off. And one thing that I find amazing about this, that entire incident, is the ICE agent walks in front of the vehicle to get around it. And people act as though he intentionally put himself there before the car
right,
started
moving. He's filming
moving.
The entire time. He's walking around filming the whole thing. And right
so
there, where that vehicle backs up, she points the vehicle at him.
Yeah.
She points the vehicle at him. Now, here's the other crazy part that I look at too in this. I want to hear your take on this because, I mean, we only got a couple seconds left, but hell with it. I'm going to spit it out there real quick. I think the fleeing felon rule could apply here. I absolutely think the fleeing felon rule could apply here because she just hit that officer and she has the potential of steering her vehicle and hitting another one. That officer could have shot her in the back of the head and it would have been a good shoot all day long if he had reasonable fear that another officer could have been injured. Your take, you got 10 seconds.
I'm on the fleeing felon rule. There'd have to be more people in front of her. My thing is she's detained from the moment the lights turn on, the officer gets out of the vehicle in his uniform, yells, get out of the car, stop the car, and then says it again as he tries to open the door. And then she flees. From anything after that moment, you've made the wrong decision.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula and you like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now, a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf. And I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic-based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new products, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else it's doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there. The shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason one way or another we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalists. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you ask Grok, or if you ask a sports nutritionist, or if you ask the nutritionists on the Olympic teams, they will tell you that creatine is absolutely a must. TheAlexShowStore.com already has the very best creatine you can get on the market. But now we're introducing this, and I am extremely excited. Let me introduce you to this bad boy that comes in two delicious flavors. That is the recommended daily allowance of the highest quality type of creatine. Right there, concentrated, the very best. We get it from the top lab in the country, the highest rated. 5 milligrams of this a day. Bottom line, this is tasty, it's delicious, it's good for you, it helps children, it helps middle-aged people, and it really helps old people. If you're not taking creatine, you're crazy, and we've got the best.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. I am joined right now by Richard High. You guys might know him as Angry Cops, and he is one hell of a cop. Rich, you ready to start taking some calls with some of these folks and see what they got on their mind?
I can't tell you how actually excited I really am about this. I've never done this before, and I'm suited, dude. I'm suited.
I used to do it on my podcast quite a bit, and people would call in, and then it's hit or miss. You know, it's hit or miss on what you get. I had some guy that liked to call in and just drop the N-word left and right, like, every time, just to try to get my show shut down. It's like, dude, used to drive me nuts. Anyways, we're going to bring up Hammer Hardy from First Amendment, baby, First Amendment, just not on YouTube. We're going to bring up Hammer Hardy over inside of Florida. Hammer, can you hear both myself and Rich?
Yes, sir. Gentlemen, thank you very much for taking my call. I'm calling tonight because I felt very, very compelled because I heard Jake Lang a few days ago calling for people to come out into the street. And I want to say that that's basically just going to – it's just going to resort in a mindless street brawl. I've already seen this before in Portland back in 2019 when we had a big rally. We had hundreds of patriots come from all over the country to go stand up against Antifa. And what I learned was that the real problem is the local government, because when we crossed that bridge over the river and Antifa started to follow us, I thought, wonderful, this is perfect. So now we can show that we're the ones that are in the self-defense position and they're the aggressors. But I had one of the local Portland cops say, it doesn't matter if you're defending yourself. You're going to be blamed and you're going to be arrested if you stay here and fight. Now you need to get out of here. So if we all go out there to Minnesota and, you know, we're, you know, hundreds of patriots and we're going to stand up against all of these leftists, it doesn't matter that we're in the right. The local government is going to throw everybody in jail. And where's Jake Lang going to be then? Is he going to help pay for people's bail? Is he going to help pay for people's legal bills? No. Everybody's basically going to be left out there to fend for themselves. And I've said this before, we need to start thinking like a mafia, not a militia. This is a completely different form of warfare. I've seen this before. I've been through this before. And I don't want to see people led into a trap.
Well, I mean, number one, I just want to start off by saying this. I do not I agree with some of Jake's statements, but I want to make it perfectly clear. I do not support that man. That man, in my opinion, is a massive racist. I can't even count videos that I've seen of him giving Nazi salutes, dropping the N-word. I believe he stood outside of a building, saying you're not going to turn America into N-word lovers, things of that nature, right? And he does extremely offensive things. So people need to do their research on that man first and foremost. And I will say second, if we're going to be sending people, over into Minnesota to go protest, those federal judges have set a standard. And Rich, I want to get your take on this too. I think those federal judges set a standard by not arresting, What's his dang name? Don Lemon. All you got to do is grab a camera and go stand in the middle of a mosque and just start shoving it into the face of the imam after he tells you to get out. And all of a sudden you're just protecting, you're just going along with the First Amendment. What do you think, Rich?
Well, one of those things that I think protects, Don Lemon, that he uses as a shield and also as a cudgel,
is that he's a member of the press, right? People say that they're a member of the press, but you actually have to become a paying member of the press and get credentials, right? You're not just a member of the press because you show up with a camera and you have a YouTube channel. You actually have to pay for credentials to be a member of the press. And Don Lemon uses that as an advantage. So that way he can piss and moan and say whatever he wants to do and then get away with it, right? It's more of a tactical decision from him. It also is a form of validation to where people look at him and say he's a real media personality, even though he's garbage, personal opinion. But I will say this. I think you're right. If Don Lemon and these people that went into the church to protest or I don't even know if it was to protest. Wasn't it to just find ICE agents and harass
them? No, it was to interrupt. No. One of the priests at the church, was director of the local ICE office. And so that's why they went to protest at that particular church. Yeah.
Wouldn't you want to befriend that guy? Wouldn't you as a protester want to say, don't you feel like this is more morally reprehensible to you? Or don't you want to work with us? Or can you show me the things that you're doing in your body of work that's making sure that these people are treated well as a Christian, as a believer in Christ? But instead, what you want to do is you want to go up to him, whether that's him or not, one of the other parishioners could have been him, and say and threaten him in a house of worship when he's literally preaching,
kids, everybody.
Hey, forgiveness, you know? It's mind-numbingly dumb.
It's insane. And Don to claim that he didn't know what was going on. Dude, my butt, he didn't know what was going on. But like I said, the federal judges, in my opinion, set a precedent.
Be careful. He might like
that. I would not be surprised. Yes, he would. I would not be surprised if we see people actually doing exactly that. I would not be surprised if we see Jake Lang pushing people to do exactly that, to go into those mosques because of that. So Hammer, dude, thank you, by the way, for your point. Like, we do need to be thinking about this way more strategically. If you're out on the street identifying as a patriot, obey the dang law. Set the example, like be a good citizen, you know, as all of these nut jobs end up saying, what's your name? Good citizen. All right, good citizen. Well, I mean, try to do that. All right, man. We got another caller.
You follow state firearms policies, okay, if you go armed.
Yeah. Look up, especially if you're the director of the FBI.
Minnesota, when they don't recognize another state's pistol permit thing, because now you're going to be violating, you're going to be carrying illegally in the state of Minnesota.
Make sure you got the reciprocity. And how, by the way, how embarrassing was that for Cash Patel? Did you hear that segment I played where Cash was like,
oh,
you just can't do that. It's illegal. And I'm like, you're the director of the FBI.
Brother, I've got a video coming out. It's either going to be tonight or tomorrow morning. And it's a complete breakdown of the incident to include Cash Patel, John Stewart, who's lost his mind, and a couple other people that have said some absolute asinine things. Of course you're allowed to protest with a firearm. How many Second Amendment rights protests have you seen where people are open carrying intentionally in order to show that the Second Amendment is true? It's alive. You're utilizing it today. And on the opposite side of that, how many Black Panther morons have we seen with 22 long rifle conversion kits that aren't even loaded sitting on the backs of cars, like almost openly threatening ICE agents? Like, is that not a protest?
I can forgive a lot of people for making that statement, but the director of the FBI, come on, man. All right. Let's bring up Michael from Washington State. Michael, are you there, sir? And can you hear us?
I am. And I'm enjoying the conversation. Couple of things just from what you guys have been discussing. One is Don Lemon himself is a racist. Cash Patel is also uninformed as an FBI director, and he doesn't know about the Second Amendment. But I will say one thing. It does vary state by state. I told your screener I was a former prosecutor. I was in the military for 30 years as well, and I did was a prosecutor in the military. But one thing, like state by state, Washington State, for example, has passed some laws that prohibits the carrying of firearms during a demonstration or in parades and sort of public gathering sort of thing. So some states do outlaw it. But what I wanted to talk about was with Good and Preddy. Assume that they weren't shot, and just to analyze prior to them being shot, were they engaged in conduct that was criminal? And it does appear so. In both of their cases, they were there at criminal conduct by each of them, at the very least, obstruction of federal law enforcement. And I think that's pretty clear. And then the question, I think context for both of these shootings is going to be, what's the context? Because we're very myopic when we look at these films and we just see what happened in the instant. but we don't draw back and look, what's the context? And the same thing happened with Kyle Rittenhouse. You know, we have to see the context of when he was initially being pursued and chased and hounded, and he had to go through all his machinations and then ended up having to use a firearm to defend himself. The same thing with these two. There is zero doubt, in my opinion, and this is kind of what I wanted to see if you guys agreed with, that it's pretty well understood now from objective viewing that there is a weaponization of far left people in Minnesota. And Minnesota is I've been to Minnesota. Anybody who's been there knows that it's very far left. You have a bunch of these white, super educated, indoctrinated liberals, and they're just so far left. They've been weaponized, and I think Preddy and Good are both falling into that category. And so you have people who are their managers who basically send them in as the useful idiots to cause problems. And this is the intended outcome. This is what the leftists want to have happen, and that is to provoke an incident to create martyrs. And they've done that. And so now we're in the optics phase where the info wars is happening. Who can win the hearts and minds? And yeah. I have to say the left is doing a pretty good job. Sorry to speak so long, but I just kind of wanted to give you my perspective on these things.
Rich, your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a lot to break down there. when it comes to, I know you said that like there's people in Minnesota and there's a large degree of people there are liberal, you know, they're, it's a homogenous society for the most part until, you know, obviously a bunch of Somalis move in and start taking all the money out of the local government. But I think it's important that when you have these massive scale protests, the individuals and the professional protesters, the intentional agitators are showing up. And that point of taking a large group so that there's like anonymity in it. I say, hey, I'm the professional agitator. I'm the professional protester. Guys, I want you to do this, 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 and this to a large anonymous group, right? And people lose their anonymity in that large group. Then they go and do something. Now, the intent of the agitator is to create a scenario in which there is a lose-lose for whatever entity that they're going against. We'll say ICE because that's what's happening right now. And when that lose-lose situation happens, they love it because what happens is maybe not a loss of life for the individual that's a protester, but maybe they're arrested or they're roughed up a little bit, but they're cannon fodder. And then they get to use that individual person's identity of, oh, she's a Karen. She's a nice, well, not a Karen, but she's a nurse at a VA hospital. And now they're an individual once they become a victim in their eyes, once they've been used as cannon fodder. And then what do they get to do? They use that to push against ICE or whatever entity that they're pushing against. Look at this individual as a group now, ICE as a group. Look at how bad they are. So I think a lot of this is professional protesters getting involved and manipulating some of the local people in Minneapolis to do their bidding. I agree with that part from the caller. I forgot his name.
Yeah, and sir, I want to thank you for your service. I want to thank you for your continued service to the country and the community and everybody else. And Rich, if nobody's told you lately, because I know you catch a lot of hate for being in law enforcement and also for your service to the country, thank you for your service too, sir.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
I know, but hey, yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
And I do it for the coffee for a six and pack. For the Applebee's that I get on
the Applebee's. I think you guys are both right, man. And I think the fundraiser that got set out for old Mr. What is it? Preddy? It's a weird name, man. And mine's Tardio, and I'm telling him he's got a weird name. Yeah, for Mr. Preddy, the end of his GoFundMe, when they're talking about any proceeds that can't go to Alex's family for whatever reason are going to end up going to the Immigrant Defense Project. And there's 1.6 mil sitting in there. I call them cannon fodder, useful idiots, things of that nature. But I think they're weaponizing him for dang sure, man.
You mean they're going to use this incident for money to fund more of the things that they're doing to ruin our country?
Say it ain't so.
Say it ain't so.
People are like, where is it they're getting money for these signs? Like, where could they possibly be getting the money for these signs and all the protests?
Yeah, not everything is George Soros. You know, it can be smaller entities that are good at crowdfunding.
It very well could be. All right. Let's bring up Adam from Missouri, Rich, because he's got a question for you about some claims, apparently. And I'm hoping it has to do with what you were doing over in the Buffalo school system. personally.
Oh, yeah.
Adam, sir, can you hear us?
Yeah. Hey there, guys. Now, I wasn't going to talk about the Buffalo school system, but I'd love to hear more on that, too. Rick, that's an honor, man. I'm sure this is a weird situation. Yeah, taking calls, though, when you're a YouTuber, kind of a weird deal. But, shout out to a mutual friend of ours, Gary Nerdrotic. Been on my show a couple times. Love that guy. Love that you guys are associated. But, yeah, I want to know, because there are some weird conversations going out there right now with a lot of fake posts. People have already addressed the claims that in Minnesota, supposedly, you're not supposed to be able to go to a demonstration with a firearm. I looked up. Bullshit. There's nothing about that. Sorry for the language. But another one, I had a huge conversation with somebody who I had to just shut up. Going on, and I heard you address at the beginning of the show that he is a legal gun concealed carry owner. We know that. But that he didn't have his ID on him. Is there any actual claim? One, is a substantiation that he didn't have actual physical ID on him? And is that any real reason to upscale this claim that he was there illegally?
I've got my thoughts on it, Rich. Why don't you want a shot at it?
Oh, yeah. So I call these Karen laws. Now, Karen laws are useful for law enforcement to get further into something. It's not a loophole. It's just a law that has to go inside, that has to coincide with something else. And I'll use a car for an example, right? You're driving a car. You need a license for it, similar to a pistol. When you get pulled over, some states say, hey, even though we've got a database, we still need you to carry your license for an ID when driving, right? How many people get tickets for not having their license on them when they get pulled over by a trooper? Not many, even if they don't have it on them, because we can look it up. Same thing with firearms. For the most part, there is a database where you can look up if you're not carrying your firearm. I have never, ever charged somebody, and I can't speak for anybody else, but I've never seen anybody else get charged for not having their ID on them. That's a red herring that, although is true, yes, he should have had his ID on him, showing that he is a legal permit holder and can carry concealed. But does that make him better or worse, or is it a moot point? Because that has nothing to do with the rest of the scenario. I think the second. I think what it tries to do is it tries to make your Second Amendment right, something that the Gestapo can stop you for.
1,000%. It's a moot point because it has absolutely nothing to do with the legalities of whether or not the officers, why they shot him and at all. And I think what you're trying to do is you're trying to paint the guy in a bad light because he doesn't have it. The case and the shooting should stand on its own merits. So people that are bringing that up, number one, are idiots, in my opinion, if they're using that as an argument against or anything. And I agree with you also, Rich. I mean, it's a Karen law. Over in Colorado, where I was a law enforcement officer, we had high-capacity magazines, right? And if you were using a high-capacity magazine in commission of a crime, it could be an enhancement charge that ends up getting thrown on at the end. And I remember I had a guy beating the living breaks off of his girlfriend in a car. They didn't even know I walked up behind him. And I just catch this dude, like, leaned over, just going to town on her. And I immediately run over to the passenger side, rip this dude out the car. He's got a AK pistol on his lap that ended up falling down on the ground. And he's got a couple other unserialized firearms on himself that he admits that he bought from his buddy, which is a big no-no, right? Like, if you're building firearms, you can keep them for yourself. But the moment you build a firearm and it's unserialized and you transfer it, it's a big no-no. But this idiot ends up telling me that, right? But either way, I look at this guy and I hate domestic violence. I hate domestic violence. I hate people that like domestic violence abusers, the freaking worst. And so I'm looking at every charge I can throw on this guy. And I'm sitting down there. My buddy's like processing him through the jail, right? Like running over. And I'm sitting there working on his paperwork. And I got another buddy sitting next to me. And I go to put the magazine charge on there because it enhances it up to like a felony, right? Stuff enhancing him. Ends up getting slapped with a felony. And I'm like, I kind of want to do it. My buddy's like, don't you dare do it. That's an unconstitutional law and you know it. And I'm like, but he's domestic violence. But yeah, man, it's a Karen law. They're Karen laws.
They are Karen laws. Yeah. We have a Karen law in New York State. It's the maximum capacity magazine for people. And it's just like in New York State, the civilian population is limited to how many rounds they can carry in their firearm, like their pistol, their self-defense weapon, right? Legal carriers, New York State permit, one of the most difficult ones to get. Kathy Hochul's made it harder, right? More stipulations, more training. Training is good, but not when the government forces you to do it for a right that you should have naturally, right? And yet the only way that you can get a high capacity magazine, high capacity over 10 rounds in New York State is if you're a law enforcement officer. So that means, oh, everybody that gets private security and law enforcement to, you know, parade them through the street, sometimes literally with lights and sirens on, you get all the rounds that you need in order to defend yourself, but not the local populace of the United States, which coincides with our Kash Patel. He had two magazines on him. Oh, God, clutch your pearls, dude.
I'm actually good on him for carrying two mags, but he should have acted maybe a little bit more responsible and not fought back, which, by the way, he also got a rib broken the week prior for fighting the feds as well. Or so it would seem. That's what the report came out via CNN, by the way.
I wasn't sure about if that was confirmed or not yet. But if that is, hey, last week you decided to fight the feds. Did you have a pistol on you then when you were getting in physical altercations intentionally with law enforcement? Because now it just seems like you're intentionally trying to be a martyr now. I want you to shoot me so then I can be the guy that everybody looks up to, the next George Floyd or Rosa Parks or whatever you want.
Yep. Oh, there he goes. There he goes. There he goes. It's beautiful.
Oh, so that time he wasn't carrying a pistol or?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
It's almost like he intended to get arrested and then knew that if he carried a pistol, it could end poorly for him and then decided to change tactics a week later.
Which is known as suicide by cop. Which is why I want to bring up Bart from Texas, because he's got a comment on suicide by cop, apparently. So, Bart, sir, can you hear us?
Yeah.
What you got, friend?
Can you hear me? Well, yes, sir. One, you're from Colorado, so obviously you went through that whole communization back in the 90s. When did you
No, I didn't. It's where I retired from the military, and then I was like, crap, I got to get a job. What am I going to do? I was like, I'll be a cop. So that's how that happened.
Best decision ever.
That's fascinating. Okay. Well, I'm a fugitive from there. But, yeah, you just brought up the point. If you put two Minnesota cops out there on that line, which weren't doing their job by basically holding back protesters right past that line, that guy would have committed suicide by cop. That first heard that term in Colorado by one of the talk show hosts there who I don't have a lot of respect for various and sundry reasons. But the point is that's exactly the optic that I heard discussed previously, and that's a cogent point, so I appreciate it. And it sounds to me like you guys are doing a good job of following the law, identifying the stuff, and making darn sure that, that people are aware of it. I don't care who you piss off, but yeah. Right. And I'm sure it would be suicide by cop in New York, too. So,
I mean, doing what he did is, like I said, 99.9% of the time is going, you're going to get your forehead canoed. Like, it's just going to happen, you know, like, or shot in the small of his back or wherever it is that he ended up getting hit. You're taking the room temperature challenge, you know, so it's just stupidity on my, it's stupid for him to do what he did.
Yeah.
At what point do we start blaming people in society for what they did? Right. At what point do we stop looking for other people to blame and start acting like adults in this country and taking responsibility for our own actions? That's what we're missing in this country.
That's called position, heal thyself. I was going to bring up one more thing if I'm still on.
Well, you are, but we're running out of time, sir. So I'm unfortunately going to have to cut you off, but I appreciate you coming in. Sorry to cut you so short. Rich and I got carried away, but thank you very much. Rich, do me a favor, sir. Tell them where they can find you. Tell them what you got coming up in the future.
Yeah, so I, YouTube Angry Cops, Twitter Angry Cops, I do long and short form, informational videos about, current events in the military and in law enforcement. Some of the ones I do are shooting breakdowns like we had in Minnesota, a week ago, and then the one this week. So there's also
it's
some
been a pleasure. I'm just gonna run for Thank you. It's been a pleasure, man. Thank you.
I'm here to announce a new, extremely exciting product at thealexjonesstore.com, and that's Mind Fuel, brought to you by the same folks that developed Optimal Human. This is an Optimal Human product. We set out with our sponsor, Bigley, to come out with a clean, nootropic energy shot that doesn't have any letdown but gives you clean energy. This stuff is so strong, though, I take half a shot in the morning. It's a big shot. And another half in the afternoon if I need to work late. But again, you can still sleep on it because it's not a traditional stimulant. So if you loved Optimal Human, the strongest, best, super nutrient-packed green drink out there, available right now at theelectrostore.com, you are going to to love Mind Fuel. And when I go through these ingredients, go research these for yourself and then know, when you find out how great they are, that we have the very best and the very strongest in this product, Mind Fuel, available right now at TheAlexShowStore.com. Nootropic Mind Fuel is here. This clean, caffeine-free energy shot is designed for clear thinking, steady focus, and zero compromise. It's time to abandon sugary energy drinks and stimulant heavy formulas in favor of clean, functional, nootropic-based energy. Zero calories, sugar-free, benefit, no crash, no blood sugar spike. Advantage can be used daily without guilt, and it's good for your whole body, not just your brain. Caffeine-free formula, smooth, clean energy. Advantage, ideal for caffeine-sensitive users and late-day use. Nootropic Alpha GPC, Citricoline, DMAE, GABA. Benefit supports mental clarity and focus. Advantage competes with premium brain formulas in a convenient shot. And the best part is, it's an adaptogenic and herbal proprietary blend. Balanced, grounded energy. Advantage appeals to both biohackers and holistic consumers. And then it's got high-quality electrolytes and a spectrum of high-quality B. If you love our other products, TheAlexShowStore.com, you are going to love Mind Fuel. And if you haven't tried our Ultramethylene Blue or our Shilajit or our Irish Sea Moss or our Bovine Colostrum, you're crazy. These are all incredible products. Get your Mind Fuel now at TheAlexShowStore.com and help keep us on the air on powering your life.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you guys enjoyed that portion of the show. In the next hour, you guys are going to love it even more. I got another guest that's coming in for you guys. Very special guest. It's going to be Nate Vance coming up in about 5 minutes here. You guys are going to love what we have to say. We're going to be talking about all things international and why you should probably be concerned with more than just what's going on inside of Minnesota and people running around with guns on their hips that take the room temperature challenge. I want to show you guys this tweet by Donald Trump that he ended up putting out, Truth by Donald Trump that he ended up putting out on January 2nd. It's very pertinent because it looks like we're about to go to war with Iran and nobody in America is even aware of this really that's going on. On January 2nd, Donald Trump had said, if Iran shoots and violently kills peaceful protesters, which is their custom, the United States of America will come to their rescue. We are locked and loaded and ready to go. Thank you for your attention on this matter, President Donald Trump. Shortly after that, people of Iran started to get kind of ticked off. Why? Because their internet got shut off. And then we saw reports of a couple thousand being killed. Then we saw reports of over 20,000 being killed. Now I'm hearing that then it was over 30,000 is what I ended up getting told by a contact over in the government in Israel. And then I end up hearing that it's actually even higher than that just the other day, that it's upwards of 50,000. And now there's even estimates higher up to 60,000. Well, people of Iran are ticked. The entire diaspora from the people of Iran are upset that Donald Trump has yet to intervene because of that statement he made threatening the Ayatollah. And Donald Trump had came out and he had said that, well, Iran had refused to do anything about the, or excuse me, Iran had refused or complied with Donald Trump's request. Excuse me. They said they're not going to hang their people publicly. Good on Iran telling Donald Trump they're not going to commit executions. Well, then we end up hearing that they're actually gassing their people this last week. And we started to get reports of that. People were complaining, say it was something other than CS gas. It wasn't just tear gas. It could be a whole freaking mess of gas that they could be using over there. I think it's a particular type of gas that Nate had been exposed to over on the front lines inside of Ukraine. But all of that aside, today, Donald Trump ended up coming out with a new statement towards Iran. And it seems like every time he does this, it's we're getting foreign policy by Truth Social. And I've got to tell you guys, I spoke about this yesterday that Iran is not in particular about Iran killing its own people. Let's go ahead and put that tweet up there on the screen that Donald Trump had put out, talking about the massive armada moving that way. In this particular statement that Donald Trump ended up making, he wasn't about the Iranian people being killed by the regime. No, it was about uranium enrichment and how Iran better listen up. They better accept the olive branch that we've extended to them because we've got a massive, and I quote, a massive armada heading to Iran. A massive armada heading to Iran. That'd be the wrong one up there on the screen. That's okay. So the massive armada is heading to Iran and it's moving quickly with great power, enthusiasm, and purpose. It is a large fleet headed by the great aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln. greater than that that's been sent to Venezuela. And like Venezuela, it is ready, willing, and able to rapidly fulfill its mission with speed and violence if necessary. Hopefully Iran will quickly come to the table and negotiate a fair and equitable deal. No nuclear weapons. No nuclear weapons. Look at that. No nuclear weapons. I thought we took care of that. I thought we had that discussion after the 12-day war. I thought we had said that we took care of all of it. The problem is that we waited forever to start bombing them. And while we dropped a dozen 30,000-pound bombs on Fordow, it would seem that the regime was able to move it. But I don't even think this has to do with the uranium enrichment at this point in time. I think it's got something to do with a little bit more. We've got issues with Russia. We've got issues with China. Everybody wants to know why the silver price is going through the roof right now. Yeah, we can blame COMEX. We can blame the paper trades. We can blame all of those things that are actually going on here in the United States and our own stupid policies that allowed it to happen. But what's really happening is China is restricting their exports. They've sanctioned over 20 industries within the defense industry, 20 different companies within the defense industry ended up getting sanctions. You think they're going to be exporting silver to those companies? No. It's a big issue. And do you know who's backing all of them up? Iran and the IRGC. The IRGC's dealing with terrorism over inside of Yemen. They're actually projecting it, affecting international trade routes. It's a massive issue, not just for the United States, but for the entire world. And coming up next to talk to me about it, ladies and gentlemen, Nate Vance, be prepared. It's going to be one heck of a show.
The entire world is racing into the fourth turning and the greatest quickening our species has seen in 10,000 years of recorded history. You know you're in a war, right? And it's a declared war. The globalists have declared war on Team Humanity. They've declared war on the God that made us. It is not incredible. It is not heroic. It is not amazing to fight this. It is survival. This is the priority. This is the real world. This is game time. This is the crossroads of human destiny right now. Right now. And I see a bunch of other people not realizing how desperate the situation is. We need maximum urgency. We're up against the most evil people the world's ever seen. Don't you understand that? I don't want anybody to go out and be physically violent. I want you to kill with truth. Kill with your will. Kill, kill, kill their lies.
You're tuned in to The War Room with your host, Matt Tardio. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I am so excited to be able to introduce this next guest that's coming up, Nate Vance. Now, long before J.D. became vice president of the United States, back when he was a senator, Nate decided that he would just go over to Ukraine and start killing Russians. And that he did. And he killed the crap out of them. Became friends with Nate through, I don't know, social media and a couple other things, and ended up interviewing him a while back when Nate gave me this. A magazine that he ended up taking off of a dead Russian, and up over behind my head, up above that green beret over my shoulder, is a scope that Nate also used to shoot Russians with while I was over there. Nate's recently spoken at the Warsaw Security Forum, and he's also met with world leaders. And so here to discuss the Iran situation with me, ladies and gentlemen, my friend Nate Vance. Sir, how are you today? Thank you for taking the time to jump in.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm doing good. This is a welcome break from work, so,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, you look good, man.
Yeah,
you
look, yeah. Well, you know, yeah, you look, for my age, you know what I mean? I'm doing all right.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think people would even like realize. Look, people at home don't know this. I took Nate for a pedicure after he got home from Ukraine because his feet were so disgusting. Like, that's a true story. I did. I was Nate, your feet are gross. We're going to go get a pedicure and you're going to like it. That's a true story. So, ladies and gentlemen, just because you're a grunt that kills Russians. Yeah. I don't care if you're a former SF guy. Take care of your feet, man. They're very important. Anyways, all right. So let's talk about Russia and Iran. You had told me something that kind of blew my mind. I think Putin has embarrassed Trump a couple different times. They have brought up and they have said that they were very close to a ceasefire agreement. I lost count at this point in time. Even Trump said that it was going to be one of the easiest things for them. He thought it was going to be the easiest war for them to solve. Like, those are his words, not mine. He was like, I thought this was going to be the easiest one for me to take care of. And it turns out it's not. Why is that?
Several reasons. I think primarily Putin, if he has invested so much time and money and human life into this conflict, that if you think of Russia, think back to like the Roman Empire, and in the Roman Empire, you had the emperor and then the Praetorian Guard. And if the emperor got out of line, the Praetorian Guard was really there to protect the emperor unless he got out of line. And then they were there to protect Rome. And in a few circumstances, they did remove the emperor, right? And it's a very similar kind of thing in Russia where the security apparatus there, if they perceive Putin to be weak, they will remove him. And he knows that. So he knows that if he loses this war or if he admits defeat or capitulates, he'll be removed. And by removed in Russia, that means falling out of a window or drinking a glass of poison tea. So it's not survivable.
How important is Iran to Russia and in the Russian war effort?
I think it's very important. I think they're mutually beneficial, right? And a good way to indicate how important it was is knowing how hostile America is to an Iranian nuclear program. The fact that preceding Midnight Hammer, we had to tell the Russians, get your scientists, get your nuclear scientists out of these nuclear facilities because we're about to kill everyone there. But essentially, since Russia has been sanctioned by pretty much the world, they have now kind of been relegated to being a hermit kingdom. They've had to figure out a way to make money and do business via countries that aren't them, right? And Iran is one of those countries that's willing to kind of assist them in doing that, moving their oil through ghost ships and, you know, kind of laundering their exports to make them look like either Iranian exports or Venezuelan exports, et cetera. So they can still sell them. It's just the money changes hands a few times in between.
So you had told me a very interesting statistic, I think back when I first interviewed you, and I still use it to this day, that for years, over 30% of the munitions that were flying across the Russian border over into Ukraine came from Russia. Is that still accurate?
Or came from Iran, you mean?
From Iran. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, I don't know if that has transitioned. I know the Russians were, building their own factories and facilities and things like that. But I think it's still a pretty significant portion of the Shahed drones have some kind of Iranian component in it, where it's an engine part or something like that. So the Iranian like weapons export thing just materially is important. But when you think about, you know, wars and militaries, they're expensive. So the Russian government being able to fund everything is important, and Iran is assisting them with that as well. But yeah, at one point it was higher than 30%. Almost all of the Shaheds for a few years were directly Iranian built and shipped up there. So.
Yeah. And I think the pro Ukrainian crowd, which now is very predominantly left leaning over here in the United States of America. For some reason, all of that ended up getting switched. They don't think that Trump is doing enough for Ukraine. And there's a lot of people that are saying America first. I personally believe that by getting rid of Russia, and by Russia losing, their credibility when they ultimately end up losing this fight, that it kind of takes them off and knocks them down from the world stage, and it helps to delegitimize BRICS a little bit. I don't think people realize that Russia is still very much a threat to the United States of America. So much, in fact, that in my opinion, that's one of the stated reasons by Trump that we needed to go over and take Greenland. Kind of your thoughts on that, because when I look at the map, it's pretty obvious to me that Greenland, you know, when you look at where Russia keeps its ICBMs, and then you draw a line over the globe, a straight line, you're flying over the top of Greenland in order to attack America. And so I can't help but think that Trump's got an agenda there to defend us from Russia. Now, he won't flat out say it's Russia, but.
Oh, I think that that's been implied by members of the administration. I don't just think it's ballistic missiles, though. I think you have the Denmark Strait, which is the body of water between Greenland and Iceland. And then you have the Rockall Trough, which is basically the body of water between Iceland and Scotland. And that is pretty much Russia's ability to get ships from Russia. They have Novomorsk, I believe, is the name of the port up in right by the border of Finland, up in the Nordic area. I'm probably getting all these names wrong. But they have that's like their one kind of all year round Atlantic port that doesn't freeze at any point. And they have to go through one of those two bodies of water to reach the Atlantic proper, right? And you know, with Russia getting cozier and cozier with China, and with China building, like, people think about that and they go, yeah, but Russia doesn't really have a big navy, right? Well, China does, and Russia's friends with China, and they're getting more and more close to China as the rest of the world pushes Russia away. So I think you could see a partnership developing between those two. And I think that partnership is, not is frowned upon or is seen as a threat, and I think accurately so. So I think the administration's goal with Greenland is like, look, we're going to secure it. Somebody's going to secure it. If Europe doesn't, you know, if Denmark doesn't stand up with, you know, the rest of Europe to do so, then we'll do it for them at some point, right? Because leaving those pathways to the Atlantic open is a threat to the United States. And that is, you know, intolerable to the security, the security of the United States. So I don't see a problem with insisting that Greenland is secure and that there is a military presence there. You know, and if it's not going to be the Europeans, we'll do it.
Well, and again, I'm glad I got you here, because you brought up China, and Russia has been leaning on China, you know, ever since Joe Biden, was in office and the war kicked off. You had Joe Biden sanctioning Russia. Obviously they were getting, you know, cut off basically from the rest of the world. China kind of stepped up on a lot of their manufacturing for a lot of their, military equipment. They were getting garbage metal, which Russia didn't really care about because they're losing vehicles left and right over there, but China kind of stepped in. And they both, between Russia and China, appear to have a common friend, which was Venezuela. And the common link between the two looks like it's Iran and the IRGC. And the first couple ships that the United States decided to go after outside of Venezuela was, you know, being operated reportedly by the IRGC. So when we're looking at Iran in particular, personally, I don't think it has a dang thing to do with the Iranian people. I think, even at this point, the uranium enrichment might even just be another reason to go after. And I think we're kind of attacking this on multiple prongs here. You know, we're going after kind of the, you know, whenever we're doing target analysis and things like that, we're often looking for a choke point. And the situation between Russia and China, we don't want to get in a direct conflict with either of them. But Trump last year had said, if you're going to war against the U.S. dollar, you're going to war against the United States of America. Or if you attack the U.S. dollar, you're attacking the United States of America. And I think that's exactly what he's doing right here, right? He's engaging in economical warfare because IRGC was shipping reportedly Venezuelan oil up to China after China ended up lending Maduro a buttload of money. And that was part of the laundering process. And then we had the Bella One, where you have, Russian nuclear sub going after it that the United States chased away from Venezuela, you know, all the way up north of the UK before we ended up interdicting that sucker. And so to me, when I look at it, I say, you know what? We've got a serious issue here. We've got two massive countries, nuclear capable countries, that are both supporting Iran. And right now we're looking at going into Iran. What do you think the odds are of Putin doing something if the US ends up bombing Iran?
Zero.
Zero.
What can he do?
Even with the regime change.
Yeah. What can he do? Right. Well, what did he do in Syria when the regime was changed there by somebody he backed? Absolutely nothing. Right. And not because he doesn't want to. It's because he can't. He got his hands are full in Ukraine. I mean, he can't spare that much. Now, what I could see him doing, if anything, would be sending, you know, agents into Iran to kind of sow discord with a new government or whatever takes over if there was regime change, just kind of making that difficult. But that's more or less to make us look bad. If we change the regime and then that regime fails, it makes the United States look bad. But it will seriously negatively impact his income. I just think that kinetically he doesn't have the means to do anything about it. Well, I mean, what's he going to do?
Well, and I think a big part of the Russia's income, as you have so eloquently pointed out in the past, is 30% of Russia's GDP comes from oil. And Iran and the IRGC have been funding and training and working with the Houthis down inside Yemen, which has effectively cut off the Red Sea. Even though the attacks on the merchant vessels have gone way down since we bombed the crap out of them last year, insurance companies aren't very happy to let those ships go sailing through the Red Sea, which cuts off the Suez Canal, which in turn makes them sail 10 times further all the way around the Cape of Good Hope in Africa. That's benefited Russia greatly. You know, their oil exports and stuff, they could still use the Suez Canal. They could still travel through the Red Sea, but nobody's going to blow them up, you know, as they're going through there because it's controlled by the IRGC. But once that goes, we're kind of in trouble. And I forget what the dollar figure was that you gave me at one point in time. As long as it stays under a certain amount price per barrel in oil, Russia's GDP is going to be hurting, correct? Russia's economy is going to be hurting. What was that price?
It's about $45 a barrel. I mean, and it's really higher than that. So $45 a barrel, if you look at that, that's the price where like, you know, and it's weird. The oil industry is one of those few industries in the United States where we're pretty efficient. You know, like we can get oil out of the ground fairly cheaply and still make a profit. And it's because we're not state run, right? It's private companies. So they have to compete with each other. You get a foreign country like Russia their break-even price might be what they call $40 a barrel, but that's for, you know, some Russian oil company, which is actually the government, to break even. But the problem is that revenue is used for the government to provide healthcare, roads, schools, all of the infrastructure that goes into that. It funds the government. So you can't just look at the break-even price for a company because the government's going to skim a bunch off the top. It doesn't work the same way as it does here. And so the country of Russia needs to make significantly more per barrel on oil, right? So you're probably looking at 55 or 60 in that ballpark. But that's just a guess because I don't know the internal government financials, right, of the Russian government. But it's going to be higher than what a private company would be. And that's like the same thing with Saudi Arabia, right? Like Saudi Arabia doesn't make money at as low of a price as the American. They tried this. They went into a price war. They lost, right? So it's, you're probably looking at $45, $50 a barrel before Russia is then having to pull money out of their reserves to pay for things.
Do you think that's why now we're starting to see, you think that now that's why we're starting to see some of these prices per barrel drop? Like I just looked at the COMEX price, for, you know, price per barrel futures, right? And it looks like it's sitting around $62 to $63 per barrel right now, over on COMEX. But I've got a feeling once, the regime has changed over inside of Iran, if the U.S. does in fact decide to bomb them, once that regime has changed, that the Red Sea opens back up and that figure that you cited of 45 is probably going to start getting a little bit higher and starting to hurt them just a little bit more. What are kind of your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, oil prices are not, there's not that much that really affects them other than supply and demand. Right now, when you like ultimately have fundamentals, which is how much oil is being made, which globally there's about 81 million barrels a day being pulled out of the ground, right? Like somebody like Venezuela produces 1 million barrels a day, Texas roughly 10. If my, I don't know, it's been a while since I've looked, so it may be slightly more, slightly less than that. But that's, you know, Texas is 10, is producing 10 times the amount of oil that Venezuela is producing. So it's supply and demand. It's how much people are using versus how much is being produced. And, you know, the global politics that affects it is things like if you block the Strait of Hormuz and people are worried about access to a certain portion of that 81 million barrels a day, well, then demand, they're predicting that demand may increase because there's less supply available to the rest of the world because you're losing all the Middle Eastern oil. If you've seen a small dip, like 65 is not a huge dip in prices. That's likely due to the fact that the Venezuelan oil that was sold on the black market is, it didn't change the overall global supply, but what it did is it added some to the non-black market, right? The above board sales that you see, which is the commodities that traders are betting on. So when you look at that stock market price, it's essentially somebody in New York that is saying, I think in 90 days, it's a 90 day future. That's why they call it a futures price. 90 days from now, we think oil is going to be worth 65 barrels, right? So you're seeing the trading price. They're buying a basically an IOU for however much oil in 90 days from now. So you also get into different seasons, right? So if you're seeing a dip in price, you know, like in the wintertime, prices go up. We're on the tail end of winter. So even though we're having this big storm right now, I know that doesn't make sense. But since people are thinking 90 days out, that's springtime. People are using less energy. There's certain industrial markers that play into, you know, people's decisions to say, oh, oil's going to be worth more, you know, in the 90 days from now than it is right now. But I wouldn't read too much into the Iranian thing as to whether or not that's why prices are going up or down, just because they don't produce enough to really alter the market that much. Not Iran alone. If you said something that was affecting the entire Middle East, that would change it. But
what? So, which is going to kind of bring me to my next point, like the United States, the alleged plans right now that are kind of being laid out is that the U.S. is going to move over towards the Strait of Hormuz. And we're going to start, you know, again, you know, acting on these sanctions because the IRGC is FTO. There's certain Russian vessels. There's certain Russian ships. They're part of the shadow fleet that we can interdict legally by U.S. law. Trump doesn't need to get anything passed by Congress in order to do so. It's already out there, right? At the moment we start doing that close to Iranian waters, I would predict reasonably that Iran's going to fight back, that they're going to shoot, right? I see them shooting at our naval vessels and things like that. The U.S. is going to end up shooting back in self-defense, quote unquote, self-defense. What are the odds that while that's taking place, that we end up bombing some of these uranium enrichment sites and things of that nature? but that these Russian scientists aren't going to get the same treatment that they got treated back in June. That over inside of Iran, we could very well be killing these Russian scientists. And how would Putin even react to that of a schwack and his engineer, like scientists?
What, in no way that's going to bother anybody in the U.S. military. All right.
Well, I'm not saying it's going to bother us.
I think his biggest reaction is he'd give Medvedev a bottle of vodka and tell him to send out an angry tweet about nuclear weapons again, which is what he seems to do every time stuff doesn't go his way. I almost said a bad word there for a second, but stop myself. But yeah, so that's basically what happens. Trump gets mad and then Medvedev threatens to nuke, Germany, and then they forget about it in a week because they, you know, lost 5,000 more guys in a.
You don't take Putin's and Medved's nuclear threat serious at all?
You mean the 73 red lines that we've crossed in the last 3 years that nothing has happened response to? No, I don't take them seriously anymore.
Okay.
No.
Okay. All right. Fair enough, my friend. Now,
Like 4 years ago, maybe, right? Because we didn't know, but I mean, we've crossed these red lines, right? Like it's like a kid that's like, I swear to God, if you come here, I'm going to punch you in the face. And then you're like, walk there. And he goes, this time I mean it. If you come to this point and you walk to that point, after a while, you're just like, dude, they're hollow threats. I don't believe you. And
it's
honestly,
like the UN sanctioned kinetic.
Yeah. Yeah. Who cares? All right. Cool, man. Thanks. But, you know, ultimately it gets to a point where it's like, we know that you don't physically, kinetically have the ability to do anything about it. So I don't care what you say.
Okay. So here's another question that I have for you, and it's based off of some personal experiences that you talked to me about on the front line over inside of Ukraine. You know, there's been complaints from Ukrainian soldiers, American volunteers that were over fighting in Ukraine, that the Russians were using chemical weapons, particularly perchlorin. Did I pronounce that right?
Chloropicrin.
One, have you experienced that over on the front lines in Ukraine? Two, what's it like? Because it sounds like to me that's what Iran is using on its own people.
I think I did. I mean, obviously, I didn't sit there. You know, I was kind of we didn't have like testing equipment, but something got on me that caused my skin to kind of, you know, barely kind of blister up wherever it was exposed. I couldn't stop coughing. I'd end up having to take like a steroid shot to kind of calm my lungs down, you know, so they'd stop freaking out. And it took me a couple of days to recover, but that was a very minimal, like whatever it was. We had heard something over the radio about, you know, guys seeing white clouds of stuff where we were going. And then that's where we went. And then I had, you know, an incident. So I think it was chloropicrin. It met the standards. And if that's what they're doing in like really heavy concentrations on civilians, it's pretty bad stuff. It's not tear gas. You know what I mean? It's not one of those things where you just go home and take a shower and then you're good. It could be pretty bad and it can cause some significant respiratory distress. If you have like kind of a already weakened, you know, respiratory system.
Yeah, it's one thing if you do it on a fit military guy that's kind of used to fighting on the front lines and run around in kit all day long, which, by the way, also weakens you pretty significantly over time. But
yeah, you get tired.
It's one thing to experience it, but you brought up something in particular that I ended up seeing a lot of the complaints, which was blistering of skin with chloropicrin. Mm-hmm. It ended up causing blistering on your skin. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had like a big rash on my, you know, neck or any of my skin that was exposed was screwed up. So that's what made me think it was something different than just like my lungs. Go ahead.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because people are describing it in a certain way over there. And before I just go and throw it out there as I'm asking you about this, I want to know how you would describe it, because I feel like that's exactly what was used over inside of Iran and the Russians probably gave it to them.
Well, yeah, maybe. I mean, like I said, so my skin blistered up, which I'm assuming if I was, you know, inhaling it, the same thing was happening inside my lungs, right? Now, I got a very small dose of it. Like, we couldn't see it. You know what I mean? It's just we heard about it in the area, or we heard about white clouds and stuff, and we had no idea if it was, you know, just the symptoms just started, right? So if that's a minor dose, and you're breathing in heavy doses of this into your lungs, and it's causing blistering in your lungs, then what can happen is you can have residual pneumonia from those blisters kind of bursting and then getting infected and pneumonia, like residual fatalities later on, essentially.
Yeah, and that's basically what they're describing. You know, they're describing their lungs being on fire. They're describing skin blisters. They're describing all of those things. And they flat out say, this is something other than tear gas. Like, this is bad. I started getting hit up first thing in the morning, you know, when the reports came out of people asked me, what is it and what can we do to help? Nate, I greatly want to thank you for coming on the show today and giving us all of your, you know, thoughts and opinions. And there's not too many people in this world that I could talk to that have actually been exposed to things like that and actually have a good world view. You know, speaking at the Warsaw Security Forum is not something that your average person gets to do. So thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, man. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, you guys are welcome to find him over on X. He goes by @VanceNate, @VanceNate.
Now, this new product is incredible. It's from our sponsor, Bigly, at thealexjonesstore.com. Optimal Human, you love the green powder, super nutrient, the very best out there. Well, this is Optimal Human Nootropic called Mind Fuel. Introducing Mind Fuel, a super healthy, super strong energy nootropic adaptogen, which doesn't make you sick, doesn't have a letdown. It is incredible. Not just a few of the bottles. Look how many bottles are in there. And I only drink about half a bottle a day. It's so strong. Look at that right there, ladies and gentlemen. So that's what comes in each box of this. And it is simply amazing. Optimal Human Nootropic Mind Fuel is here. This clean, caffeine-free energy shot is designed for clear thinking, steady focus, and zero compromise. It's time to abandon sugary energy drinks and stimulant-heavy formulas in favor of clean, functional, nootropic-based energy. Zero calories, sugar-free, no crash, no blood sugar spike, can be used daily without any guilt. Caffeine-free formula, smooth, clean energy, ideal for caffeine-sensitive users and late-day use. It's also got all these other incredible compounds like citicoline, alpha-GPC, GABA, supports mental clarity and focus. It appeals to both biohackers and holistic consumers. High-quality electrolytes and B vitamins. More than a brain shot, true functional fuel. Optimal Human Nootropic Mind Fuel, that's the name of the product, isn't just another energy product. It's a smarter alternative for consumers who demand clarity, control, and clean performance without compromise. Get 25% off for life when you become a subscriber, canceling time for free. Get Mind Fuel down at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you've never tried the original superfood greens, Optimal Human, you really want to get this as well. It's the best green food I've ever had at thealexjonesstore.com. The widest selection of Patriot apparel, all sorts of cool collectible knives and more. And that's what funds this, and that's what does this. And I really appreciate your support because I can't do it without you. So I want to commend and thank the listeners. But just like I steered you right on gold and silver 2.5 years ago, I got out of the market before that. I said, now's the time. I was totally right. Just like I steered you right on politics. These products are incredible. Get our ultramethylene blue. It is the best in the market. Our Shilajit is the best. Our Irish Sea Moss is the best. Our turmeric is the strongest. Ultimate Turmeric, thealexjonesstore.com. You are missing out. You don't get it. I want to thank those that have supported. I want to challenge those that haven't. What are you waiting for?
Just what I needed for my morning jog.
Working 12 to 13 hours a day, Mind Fuel keeps me on my toes and in the action.
Try this energy shot for a boost like no other. Power your mind and body today.
The entire world is racing into the fourth turning and the greatest quickening our species has seen in 10,000 years of recorded history. You know you're in a war, right? And it's a declared war. The globalists have declared war on Team Humanity. They've declared war on the God that made us. It is not incredible. It is not heroic. It is not amazing to fight this. It is survival. This is the priority. This is the real world. This is game time. This is the crossroads of human destiny right now. Right now. And I see a bunch of other people not realizing how desperate the situation is. We need maximum urgency. We're up against the most evil people the world's ever seen. Don't you understand that? I don't want anybody to go out and be physically violent. I want you to kill with truth. Kill with your will. Kill, kill, kill their lies.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the War Room. I'm hosting Matt Tardio is my name. And you guys can find me over on X by simply searching my name or by searching AngerTab, AngerTab. Look forward to seeing you guys over there. We are taking calls for the next 25 minutes. You guys feel free to call in 867-789-2539. So far over the last couple hours, we've gone over a heck of a lot. We've gone over transgenders receiving gender affirming care and the absolute damage that it does to them. We spoke with Rich from Angry Cops and we've had some great discussions taking call-ins from there. And we've talked with Nate Vance about war with Ron. I also mentioned things like silver. Whatever you guys have, whatever you guys want to talk about, feel free to call in. And right now I'm going to bring up Chad from Minnesota. Chad, sir, can you hear me?
Yes. Good evening, Matt.
Yeah, hey, how are you doing?
All right. How about yourself?
Not too shabby today.
Well, the previous caller is about the situation here in Minneapolis. They hit the nail on the head in a lot of ways, and I'm just calling to just inform individuals that if people are heading this way and want to have the other side of the situation and, you know, have your thoughts be heard, which is great. I think that everybody should be able to come here. I'm just saying, and the previous caller, the prosecutor, I believe from Florida, had indicated that, you know, there is an element here that people need to be aware of. And I truly believe that it's a J6 microcosm kind of feel here, where how lopsided the situation is. So when you come in here, just be very, very tight with what you have planned, because if it goes the wrong way, which I'm not saying the good side would come in here and do that, I'm just saying they're going to provoke. I mean, you know the situation here. Everybody knows the situation, but you just have to keep in mind, like, what happened with Jake Lang. If that would have been turned into a situation where Jake would have had to have, you know, or people around him had to get into some type of melee or something, he's going to be held accountable, and the other individuals are just going to be released. I mean, we know the judges, they're corrupt here. The judicial system is corrupt. You have the situation with the public figures. That's been going on for how long? And that doesn't seem to be really getting any – I don't see him gaining any traction on getting them held accountable anytime soon. I mean, the FBI's here. The subpoenas have been sent. They've been received. They confirmed it. There's all sorts of things. And if you look at it, you know, the governor brought in his National Guard, and they were serving coffee and donuts at the Whipple Detention Center over in St. Paul to the individuals protesting over there. So it's just, you know, the situation is just, you know, hey, I'm all for be heard. But, you know, this situation, you know, it's just like these people aren't being trained. These people that are protesting, like Renee Good, regardless of that situation, her last words were, "I'm not mad at you." Okay, well, who were you mad at? And what were you doing down there? I mean, it's like saying, okay, so we know the thought process that goes in, and the public figures are saying legally and lawfully. Well, do they know what legally and lawfully means when there's a federal operation that your Minneapolis Police Department isn't containing, does not have roped off, and is properly saying, okay, you can protest from here? They don't have that.
No, they
barricade. So they're taking the law into their own hands.
No, man, they don't know. And as a matter of fact, like, you know, you said that they're not trained, but I would highly disagree with you. A lot of these people are trained. They're trained by leftist organizations. You know, like, that's exactly what they are. I brought on Angela Rose who the other day over on American Journal, who had kind of infiltrated and gone into one of these little terrorist networks, what I'm going to call a terrorist network. And they absolutely do receive training, you know, and they absolutely are well coordinated. I think there's a lot of information that suggests it. The problem is they're being trained to be cannon fodder. Right. Like this guy that ended up getting himself killed the other day, he was, in my opinion, likely trained. You know, we see him at multiple different locations being dispatched out. And it sounds like you're in Minnesota. Are you in Minnesota? Did I hear that right?
I am in Minnesota. And the just to be clear, Minneapolis, yes, is a liberal cesspool. Outside of that, Minnesota's red. Maybe the Arrowhead up above, that's for different reasons, but you know, it's the city that's bad.
Yeah, well, that was Oregon, right? Like, I was born and raised in Oregon, and over inside of Oregon, outside of the major metropolitan areas, you have a bunch of red, right? But the cities end up taking over, and they have a good chunk of the population is just shoved into these cities. And all of the people that are on the red side of the house end up having to have jobs and don't show up, you know, because they're working when it goes to these. And so I've actually heard complaints that when people are going out to these protests over inside of Minneapolis, that it's very hard to find anybody on their side, if you will. And I think that they've proven themselves time and time again. You know, when I was on the ground over inside Portland, I had people that would just come up to me because I was wearing an American flag hat or a thin blue line hat or an American flag something, you know, and they would just hate you for absolutely no reason. So just anybody going out there, just know that you can be very well assaulted for that. And there's a common saying, you know, I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6, but I don't think people understand how stupid those 12 people can be that are going to be judging you, especially when it comes to a self-defense case. You know, like, everybody's going to have their own bias. And the way that I try to explain this to people is, look at the amount of people that you probably cuss at in your head as you're driving down the road, right? As you're driving down the road and you're yelling and you're cussing at how dumb these other drivers are, just think the dumbest driver that you encounter today is probably going to be sitting on your jury. And that's who you're going to be up against, trying to convince them that you are in the right. So I appreciate you for calling in, man. Those are all valid points that you ended up bringing up. Thank you.
Yeah, I totally agree with the training. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying they are trained, but the problem is we don't know who's trained, who's not trained, what part of system they're in, what they're doing, who's involved, where the money's coming from. And I totally agree that they are trained to do things. I mean, even there was a gentleman from the military that just came out and said that he sees the insurgent style programs that are going on. So yeah, I totally agree. I'm just saying the public figures are saying, go out there and legally to the people that are downtown Minneapolis that, you know, there's 1,000 people that protested last Friday and it was peaceful. Oh, look, we're peaceful. Those people, they don't know the situation. The people that are getting injured, you know, they're getting tossed into this. And I'm not saying they're you know, in the right. I'm just saying, like, there's just all sorts of people. Like you said, they're cannon fodder. So that's it. Yeah. Thanks for taking my call, Matt.
They're all cannon fodder. Yeah, brother, man. Thank you very much. Thanks for calling in. All right, before I get accused of just supporting the right and everything else and being that, I'm actually a constitutionalist at heart. I believe in the Constitution. I don't care what you do with your own body. I don't like laws that are against the Constitution. I'll fight them every single time. But because people of the left are going to hate on me anyways, I'm just going to exercise some DEI, and we've had nothing but not American, but male callers. So let's go ahead and bring up a female caller. We got Sarah from Oklahoma on the other line. Ma'am, Sarah, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hey, hello? Sarah. Yes, hi. I got you.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, hi. It's so weird to let people know. It's so simple, actually, for people to understand this. The people who are actually funding these should be arrested. It's very easy to just go after Soros and his son and to the guy in China who's sitting there, Singham, whoever he is. All these millionaires who are donating the money towards this first should be arrested. If they are arrested and taken in, then all this will just continue. Secondly, are CIA and FBI all involved in this? So please don't tell me we are trying to fight our own government, okay? They're not doing exactly what they're supposed to do. They're looking the other way. They're turning their... Look, listen, you can go into Venezuela and grab Maduro and bring him here. But you can't go into Minnesota and grab Fry and Walz and take him to jail. Come on. Come on. Who are you making stupid... We are not stupid people here. We see in front of our eyes exactly how the government is playing us. And we are allowing them to do it. What's going on in Texas? What's going on in Florida? Tell me something. Why is Trump not declaring the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization? It doesn't take investigation. Look around you. Look at the mosque. Look at all the Islamic centers coming up. I'm in Oklahoma, and I fought for Broken Arrow not to allow this to happen to our... Of course, it's already here. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of mosques already here. But why is Trump not taking action? Tell me. Why is he not paying attention to what's going on within America? Why is he paying attention to everybody else outside America? India, Japan. I can name all the damn countries he's worried about.
Ma'am,
but he's
you're,
not
you're breaking
worried
up
about
pretty,
our own country.
You're breaking up pretty bad, but I did enjoy your rant and your statement when you're saying, don't tell me we can't rip Maduro out of Venezuela, but we can't go in and grab Walson and Fry and get their butts out of there, right? Difference is we have U.S. citizens and we already had charges levied against Maduro, and so that they had the legal ability to go in and get them, right? And they're currently building their case against Walson and Fry. Coming up on February 3rd is when all of the subpoenas, I believe, at least for Jacob Fry, his subpoena for his office to produce documents and also to show up and actually testify to those documents is actually coming through. And I would be really surprised if we didn't get something out of that. And I very much look forward to that. And I think that's also why we ended up having Walz come back and say, yeah, we're going to start towing the party line a little bit, because I think he knows he's cooked. I think he knows he's got him. I learned a long time ago not to argue with anybody or try to convince them when they say, you can't tell me or you will never be able to convince me. Anybody that ever tells me that their mind's already made up. So I'm not even going to address the CIA comment. I'm not going to address like our own government being involved in it. Obviously, there's government officials that are involved in this crap. Let's just be perfectly clear about it, right? Like there is clearly government officials, at least at the state level, involved over inside of Minnesota. But whether or not people inside the federal government are involved is going to be the real question. And that is what I really look forward to hearing. Ilhan Omar, for example, yeah, she's probably involved. And when you have $20 billion is the last figure I heard Trump put out, $20 billion worth of fraud, that greases a lot of different wheels. And when you have somebody in office, as long as you did, like Barack Obama, and then you have a short little break, and then you have Biden jump in there right immediately after. Like the 4 years of Trump in between Obama and Biden isn't enough to clear all of the trash out. And so I have no doubt a lot of these people are getting overhead coverage from somewhere. And you just got to be patient and take time. If we're going to sit here and claim to be on the side of the Constitution and claim to be on the side of what's right, then we can't just go arrest people without having the proper paperwork done, unfortunately. And with that, ma'am, I want to thank you for calling in. I really wish you were coming through a heck of a lot more clear, because I know Oklahoma's got a lot of issues going on. You guys are not too far where you said outside from Dallas, and we used to go over there from time to time. It's really sad what's happening. But yes, the Muslim Brotherhood, I know for a fact they are looking at the Muslim Brotherhood as we speak. I think we're coming up towards the end of the timeline on the determination whether or not they are going to be declared an FTO or a foreign terror organization. And it needs to happen. It needs to happen, in my opinion. When we go all the way back to, you know, like late 2000 court cases when they were named as co-conspirators, and the, I forget the name of those nut jobs, that nut job down in Texas that was funding Hamas. But yeah, I mean, it's the Holy Land Five or whatever it was. They ended up getting named in that. So I think they need looked into it. I think it needs to happen. They're based out of Egypt. Egypt's a BRICS nation, but for some reason we give a bunch of money to frickin' Egypt. Like at some point we need to cut this stupidity off, and we need to actually start taking care of our own country, and we need to start, you know, calling it what it is. Look, the Second Amendment isn't absolute. None of your constitutional rights in this country are absolute, right? Like your Second Amendment right, if you want to carry in a certain states, the Supreme Court's already said, look, you might have to get a concealed carry permit. You want to buy a gun, you might have to get a background check. Same thing when it goes to protesting. You got to do it legally. You can't just run into a movie theater and scream fire. Somebody gets trampled. You get your butt sued, right? Like words have consequences. It's not an absolute right. And it should be the same for religion. If your religion is teaching to kill people, then it's not a religion. It is a death cult, and it needs to get looked into, right? Like at least say that these particular verses are not okay, and you cannot preach this in America. You can't preach that it's okay for your religion to overthrow our country. That's not a religion. That's not okay. And that's what's taking place in some of the mosques over here in the United States of America. I've heard and I've seen the clips. They're real. So, ma'am, I want to thank you for calling in. I appreciate you. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to move on. I want to bring up Cody from Alberta. Very curious, Cody from Alberta. Where it is are you calling in from, sir? Oh, okay. All right. Well, we'll move on and we'll go over to Bart from Georgia. Bart, can you hear me, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking the call. Matt, I want to talk about these riots, and this can be easily stopped. Look at what Japan does. When they're disorders here, they spray them down with blue dyed water, and then the rest next mm-hmm. day they go and find everybody's dyed blue and arrest them. ICE and Border Patrol should use wintertime to their advantage. Spray these people down with water. Just tell them, we give you 1 minute. We're going to spray you down with water, and then tough. After that, and number two, they should pull back from these current operations and start massive checkpoints and ask every person, are you an American citizen? Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, appreciate it. I mean, I can see your point with using water and using the cold to your advantage, but here's a problem. And I say this as a guy that's been hypothermic numerous times in my life. It absolutely sucks and it's not fun. But, you know, last time I got hypothermic, I was in SEER school. I was thrown inside of a tiny cage and being squirted down with water, being told to scream like a little girl. And I was a fit adult male at the peak of my physical fitness levels that had been starved for God only knows how long of sleep and food. But I want you to look at the average American in this country, right? And I agree with you that we need to make water cannons great again over here in America, right? But when you start talking about negative 20 degree weather and we start blasting people with ice cold water or any water or even hot water for that matter, it's negative 20 degree weather. It's freezing cold over there, man. You hit those people, that can get looked at as lethal force. It can cause serious and or great bodily injury, right? It'd be the same thing as shooting somebody, for lack of better terms, in that type of weather. I wish that they ended up coming out with some sort of a dye that we wouldn't have to worry about that and then go and start arresting those knuckleheads. I absolutely think the government should do more. As a matter of fact, I think they could do something without even having to do that and bring that up, brother. I think that they could set up a quick reactionary force. You can get the National Guard in there to go cordon off the area, declare it an unlawful assembly, and just literally put their freaking, you know, nose to the grindstone and just start arresting people. Have as many zip cuffs on hand as, you know, 10 times that as you got officers and just start slapping cuffs on everybody and start taking them in and processing them. And instead of releasing them, actually make them sit there and go through the dang process. It is appalling to me how much crap is getting away. They're like, this is what happens when you have a lawless society in this country. This is what happens when you don't enforce laws, period. If we don't enforce laws, we end up having like mass chaos. These laws are being enforced in all sorts of other states with very minimal issues. But for some reason, inside of Minneapolis, where we have a governor, where we have mayors, where we have a mayor of St. Paul that refuses to even acknowledge that people's civil rights were violated and instead tries to stand up for the rioters that break into the church, insurrectionists, whatever you want to call them, and they start screaming in people's faces, causing babies to cry. When you have that happen, those people need charges built on them first. You start cutting the head off the snake, and at the same time, you start scooping up everybody on the street. These things happening is unreal, and it needs to get solved, man. So I don't know if you're even still there, but that's how I feel about it. I'm sick and tired of it. Just literally start punishing to the max extent of the law. Just make it happen, Captain. I want to bring in Colby from Kansas. Colby from Kansas. Colby, sir, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. So
what you got for me today?
What I was going to say is, first off, speak the truth supporter right here. Thought I'd hop in and, you know, support what you're doing here. I'm glad that you're reaching out to other platforms and all that and spreading the good word.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you.
But my point that I wanted to make is that it's so ridiculous, that, you know, the Democrats are actively pushing these rioters to commit more and more violence towards these ICE agents when they see what's happening. Escalation is getting these people killed, and, you know, they're actively advocating for their voter base to, you know, take the room temperature challenge. That's how I see it, and that's
why do you think that is?
Like,
why do you think they're doing that?
Just to create, you know, the conditions in which they have something to cry about. They always want something to cry about, and they want to have some sort of agenda to push. So they use these people as, you know, talking points, essentially, to, you know, convey their agenda towards these mentally ill, you know, leftists, you know.
Well, I mean, I've got a reason to think that
they're teetering on the edge.
I've got a reason to think that they're doing it. And I think it's one to create more violence and chaos so that they can push their own agendas and keep themselves in office, because then they could push different stocks and everything else and line their pockets. You can have Ilhan Omars that open up their own, you know, wine factories underneath their husband that ain't worth a dime, that all of a sudden are worth millions, that doesn't just disappear off the map out of nowhere, which, by the way, I'm not sure how the vast majority of Islam views Ilhan Omar, you know, owning an alcohol company, but I'm pretty sure that's not good. You're not allowed to do that. That's bad. Bad, bad, bad Muslim. Don't do that. You're not supposed to be drinking alcohol. You're not supposed to be dangerous producing it and freaking giving it out to everybody else, at least to the best of my knowledge and my understanding. So how that goes. But I think it improves their voter base. I think it gives them fuel. I think it gives them plenty of fuel to just pour on the fire, and you just keep pouring gas on the fire. And they use these people like cannon fodder. They don't care about them. It's like when I had Corey on earlier, you know, all these people that are claiming to care about human lives and humanity, but they're all for open borders. And you have 80%, isn't that the figure he gave? 80% of women crossing the border are getting raped. You can't tell me that you care about people when you have 80% of the women being smuggled across the border getting raped. Where is their outrage there? They don't care, man. They quite literally don't care. Well, Colby, appreciate you jumping in here, brother, and thank you for showing the support. Love you, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you for thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, brother. All right, I want to bring up Brian from San Antonio. Brian, sir, how are you today?
What's up, Matt? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you, brother.
Hey, it's Ross.
Oh, yeah, I recognize the voice, man. Of course, yeah. What's going on, friend?
I was trying to get a hold of you earlier when you had Rich on to talk about the good incident and the Alex thing. Mm-hmm. I saw some more information about Alex, Pretty or Freddy, whatever his last name is.
Yep.
I saw a video where he was spitting on either ICE or Border Patrol, and then he kicked out a taillight. If you want me to send it to you, I can. And
oh yeah, please send me him kicking out a taillight, please. I would love to put that on blast.
I think it's from the day he got his ribs broken, but I'm not too sure.
Beautiful.
I'm gonna do more research on that.
Hold on, I think they got it up on the screen right here. Yep, there's him spitting. Yeah, he's just a real winner. There he goes, kicking out the did he break it? Yeah, there he goes, breaking the taillight.
Yeah. What
an idiot, man. That's why he got his ribs broken. Wouldn't you know it? Imagine that.
There's a person on Discord that wants to debate you one-on-one.
All right. Well, maybe we'll do that, man. I think we'll end up doing that a little bit later on my show.
Yeah, I told him try to call in onto here and maybe debate you, but later on, I told him to come on.
Yeah. I would have debated the guy. You know me. I'll debate anybody. So, yeah. All right.
Yeah. Well,
Ross, man, I appreciate you telling me about that video. I can't believe I haven't seen that yet.
Problem, man.
But, all right, brother, man. I'll talk to you later.
Speak the truth. That'd be awesome, too.
Will do, my friend. Will do. All right. I'm going to bring up Don from Oklahoma. Don, can you hear me, sir? We got about a minute to go, so we're going to make it quick. I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
Oh, I'm a mess. But anyway, today, Trump, I don't know what's wrong with him, but he can't seem to say, he used to say, oh, you're fired. And he'd say that to Pam Bondi and that Todd Blanche, the assistant DA. And, you know, these illegals coming in here, they just need to put a bounty on them and locations like where are they at, and people know that stuff, and it's clear Democrats and Republicans don't like all these foreigners coming in here that are unable to assimilate to our country, and they need a They used to have a civic class in school.
Yeah,
I remember had them. And,
yes,
and
sir.
It's like I don't think a lot of people have an appreciation for the system we had. And
No, sir, they don't. They really, really don't. And I want to appreciate you for calling in and say goodbye to you before we end up getting cut off here. But I agree with you. There needs to be a bounty put on these people. There needs to be. Instead of giving them $1,000 to self-deport or the Christmas bonus to self-deport, imagine what would have happened if they would have said, you know what, Americans? We're going to give you money for accurate information leading to the detainment and deportation of an illegal alien inside of the United States of America. I could have built a whole business center.
People can use this as a teaching moment. That, you know, I see a lot of these people out there who think they can imitate Alex Jones, and they have never understood the amount of work that goes in to the detailed reports that you do. That part of that is But the second part is, okay, if you're out there and you want to be Alex Jones or replicate Alex Jones, Alex teaches you the way to do it. Just pay attention. One is learn history. Understand history. Understand what templates to look for. Once you understand that, you understand what the play is going to look like. And then you're just looking to, for who to cast in what roles. Because you understand the broader course of history, how these things tend to operate, how assassinations tend to occur, how cover-ups tend to happen, how false flags occur, how staged events occur, how also could the various forms of COINTELPRO type psyops to infiltrate dissident movements to distract them from the real conspiracy into fake conspiracy in order to feed a fake conspiracies into people who otherwise would be investigating the real conspiracy. Also to act as a discrediting agent. So learn the methodologies, learn how to look at what's, how to review sources, how to understand the psychology of the participants involved. Once you understand that, you can be much more accurate and predictive at what took place with more explanatory power and more predictive capacity. And that's what Alex does, is massive amounts of work that starts with understanding history.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalists. Get ultra-methylene red at the Alex Jones.